As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Vice President Ozohowski.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. Item 5.2 does pass.
Thank you, Bart. Thank you, Rochelle, for your help on that item. We move to item 6, action items for approval. We have 6 items on the approval list tonight. Rather than asking General Manager Stone if he has any opening remarks, I'll just say you're welcome to make remarks at any moment you like. So we will take up item 6.1, approve the minutes of November 21, 2023, Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency regular board meeting of directors meeting. It's unusual to have the minutes on as an action item, but I think Mr. Byrne will explain why it is. This is a Mr. Byrne.
Thank you, President Martin. I just wanted to note that I wanted to thank Director Armitage for raising the issue with the CEQA at the last meeting. And we left it that we were going to work on language that she had proposed pending review by legal counsel. We had a follow-up call with Director Armitage and determined that she made some very good points. And we have had the redlined version of the resolution for your information and wanted to make it public statement so that it was clear that it was part of this record and the overall minutes, which because it didn't make it in time for the packet. That's the reason for raising it now.
Very good. Is action being taken on this?
Yeah, we're going to just approve the minutes, correct?
Okay. I'll entertain a motion for approval of the minutes of the November 21, 2023 SCV Water regular board meeting.
I'll make the motion. I was the one who pulled it. Thank you.
Motion by Director Armitage, second by Director Bronstein. She's on it tonight. Any public comment before we vote on this item?
There is not.
Very good. Any further discussion or questions from the board?
I have a question. This is
Vice President Gutzeit.
November 20th meeting?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to abstain because I wasn't here. But that
I just want to make sure.
Okay. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Abstain.
Vice President Ozohowski.
Abstain.
President Martin.
Yes.
This item does pass. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Board. Item 6.2, approve adopting a resolution approving the SB 221 water supply verification for the Tesoro del Valle areas B and C development. And our presenter tonight is Steve Cole. Mr. Cole, it says Assistant General Manager Cole.
All sorts of titles, I guess, right? Thank you, President Martin. Yes, as you stated, this is the consideration of the water supply verification for the Tesoro del Valle project. Our staff member, Mr. Vassilopoulos, usually gives these. You've become accustomed to those at the last couple rounds. And you'll remember that we did a water supply verification just a few weeks back for the Sand Canyon development. So this format will seem very similar to you all, and I'm going to go ahead and run through that now. Next slide, please, April. So we're just going to talk about generally what Senate Bill 221 is and what a water supply verification does. Brief project description and water demands. Kind of the water supply approach, look at supply and demand comparisons, and then get on to the conclusions and recommendations. Next slide, April. So Senate Bill 221 requires water supply verifications for developments that are over a certain size, of which this development falls into that criteria. Generally, as opposed to a water supply assessment, which is done during the CEQA evaluation process, a water supply verification comes up later in the development process after CEQA. And it is basically designed for that kind of last check-in along the way, the planning horizon for the development, giving our final authorization for the water supplies to service the development. So it basically is that last look in along the way that our agency gets at the project and the water supplies. And as I stated, the water supply verifications are not part of CEQA. So CEQA is closed on this project. And this is a document that comes at kind of the final step in the development process. Next slide, April. Project location, little tough to see here, but the Tesoro del Val project, I think most of you are aware of, kind of north of Copper Hill and we'll call it west of San Francisco Creek. And the project is shown on this map. Next slide, April. Tesoro del Val, this project is within SCV Water Service Area. It consists of 665 single-family homes, 155 multifamily, 5-acre park, and 134 acres of dedicated irrigation. Next slide, April. This slide is walking through the demand analysis of that project. We used the conversion factors that were associated with the latest urban water management plan to calculate out the projected demand for the project that's shown here. So we kind of use each group and then a unit factor and then end up with the demand. And you can, as you can see here, the average year demand is right about 847 acre feet. And then there's a multiplier that moves that up in single and multiple dry years. One thing to note, as was described in the document that was in the board packet, is that something you're starting to see with some of these larger newer developments is the plant pallet for the dedicated irrigation is starting to be planted with a lot more native plants. And so when you look at, there's a period of time where you establish those plants, and then once they're established, you actually turn off the irrigation and let nature take its course. When you take that into account, that's almost about 127 acre feet estimate of demand that will fall off over time as those plants become mature. So I thought that was an interesting fact of this project and most likely all projects that are going to start coming before the board because of the new landscape requirements. Next slide, April. So what we did on this project, like we've done before, is the foundation of the analysis is based upon our water supply portfolio. And as that's defined in our urban water management plan, the last urban plan we did was in 2020. So starting to get out there a little ways for us. We are embarking next year on the first steps of building the new plan. So that's how that goes. But what we did make sure we did is we looked at that plan for, its current information and whether some of that needed to be updated or not. And we found three kind of significant areas that we've updated the projections from the urban plan in this document. One of those is the State Water Project Delivery Capability Report. So that's how we project our state water project supplies. So that's been updated. We've also looked at the recovery schedule for perchlorate VOCs and PFAS contamination. And then most recently, with the newly proposed US EPA MCL for PFOS and PFOA, that had some changes to scheduling and additional wells that could potentially be impacted that we wanted to make sure we analyzed. Next slide, April. And so this is just a reflection of kind of those three. We'll run through those now. Table A, reliability. The most recent report, you can see here how the percentage of Table A availability has now projected some erosion over time. So we wanted to make sure that we reflected that in this document. And mainly on the average year, as you can see from this table, 56 down to 52% over time, as well as a little drop in the single dry year. The multiple dry year actually is similar. The latest report didn't handle multiple dry year in the same way. And so what we decided to do is make sure we took the most conservative thing for our projections, and that's what's included in the report. Next slide, April. This is just an example. The report goes through a much more detailed evaluation of the schedule, but this is kind of just a rough idea of the schedule and the updates to it. This one, the Saugus wells, next slide. And this one is the alluvial wells. And so, again, we went through a very detailed analysis, working with internally with engineering, operations, and water resources. It kind of touches all, and finances, right? It touches all facets of the water agency returning these wells to service. Next slide, April. And then, so you go through that process, and you end up with calculating the latest supplies versus demands. And this table is meant to reflect that. And you can see that the supplies do provide for the demands over the life of the project, including the other projects that are scheduled for development through build out. Next slide. And this was we'll call it a bonus slide. One of the things that we will be embarking on this next year is a total relook at our demand analysis. But this, as you can see, is kind of our demand trends over the last 25 years. And so what it shows is that the demand has certainly kind of flattened out and started going almost downward trend, even with the development that is happening in the community. And I think that's a reflection of, you know, conservation programs that are ongoing, but it's also a reflection of the newer developments that come online are significantly more efficient than kind of the older housing stock that's in the valley. Next slide, April. Conclusion, the project's long-term water demands were included in the urban plan. We compared those, as I mentioned, to the urban plan and updated urban plan with the latest state water project reliability report, as well as the return of service of some of our impacted wells. In doing that, we've concluded that the project water supplies over the 20-year period will be sufficient to meet the projected demands associated with the proposed Tesoro Duval development, as well as existing and planned future uses. And that's what a water supply verification requires you to look at. The final slide, this was heard at the Water Resources and Watershed Committee, and they're recommending that the board adopt a resolution approving the SB 221 water supply verification for the Tesoro Del Valle areas B and C development, and direct staff to submit the WSV to the City of Santa Clarita. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Mr. Cole. Before we open discussion for the board, do we have any public comments by members online? I guess, Jonathan, you're the guy.
Jonathan, good.
No public comment online.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Director Brownstein.
Thank you so much, Mr. Cole, for that presentation. And so I want to start off by saying that I know it's like a holiday miracle, but I'm probably voting yes on this. However, I have a few concerns and a few thoughts that I'd like to address publicly, because I think that they're important for everybody to hear and to discuss them, more for our customers than for maybe the people that are sitting here. But that's what these meetings, in my opinion, are for. So my first question has to go with the allocation of 25% in a multiple dry year. It could be, to me, it would seem very confusing why we would have a 25% allocation of water if in a one single dry year we're getting 3%, how are we able to get in multiple dry years 25% of our allocation? Beyond that, my main concern usually is with these water supplies verifications or assessments is really the issue of a lot of this banks on the fact that we're planning for the future. So right now we have enough water, but if we looked at the tables, I think it's like 5.3, 5.4, and 5.5 on 2.13, 2.15, and 2.17 pages of the packet, it looks that if we just look at our existing water supply and we look at where we'll be even with active conservation, not just passive conservation, but active conservation, our numbers start getting very close. And so it makes me personally feel a little bit uncomfortable, because I think that we have, you know, things happen, you know, and so we're planning for, you know, we're hoping for the best, but I think we also need to plan for the worst. And, you know, between supply chains or funding or another, you know, disaster around the world, it makes me uncomfortable when I see how close those numbers are. So as much as I think we're all committed here to finding more water, I think that it would be, I would like that to be addressed. Like, how sure are we that these wells are actually going to come back online when we think they're going to be coming back online? You know, that we're not going to find more contaminants that we're going to then have to take other wells offline. So just the margins are like kind of really close there. So I think that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or discussion? Would staff like to respond to that?
Yeah, sure. We'll tag team this one. Thank you, Director Bronstein. I think you bring up the challenge of planning, right? It is not a static environment, it is a dynamic environment. And so the questions that you raise are questions that good water resources planners are asking themselves constantly. And I think, you know, our agency prides ourselves on that we do have planners that are trying to look down the road. And, you know, you do get in this situation of trying to predict outcomes, but you're basing those things on kind of history. You're basing them on kind of things, how things are going currently, and you're basing them things on what you think is achievable for the future. So I think it's right to ask the difficult questions, and it's right to question kind of the approach on it. I think when we're looking at this, you know, you start ending up with this question of how conservative is conservative. And I think we're comfortable with the look in at this point in time with this project and how it fits into our long-term plans. And that's the reason we reached the conclusion that we did. Matt, if you had anything else to add.
Yeah, maybe a metaphorical journey. I think about Jurassic Park a lot, and we all have to be a little bit of Jeff Goldblum, you know, and be the skeptic about exactly what you're asking. What could go wrong? We don't want to be Richard Attenborough all the time, that, you know, this is marvelous. We don't have to worry about anything. But I think ultimately what we are is Sam Neill. You know, we are out there battling the velociraptors and the things that pop up to get us through safely. While the Jeff Goldblums point out the risks and we hopefully heed them. I think a great example is this last occurrence of PFAS during a drought, because we had been a little conservative and had a buffer, if you will, relative to current needs. We were able to lean on those banked water supplies that in the future will be there for droughts in order to help get us through with less impacts to the customer. We could have, some areas may have asked for more conservation than we had to ask for, as an example. So, and that just kind of dovetails, I think, with Steve's comment about the planning process, that one of the key things I think we've brought back to the board in recent years as a theme is what kind of buffer of uncertainty do we want to maintain? As it does come with some costs, but it also avoids some greater inconveniences to customers when you do have those unpleasant surprises that come up. And that's my Jurassic Park version of the answer.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Two-part comment. One, I know there's a reason why, and I'm going to have a coughing fit now, why there's a difference. A multi-dry year, can you explain that while I cough?
Yeah, I can walk through that. I think the difference is it's multi, and so it's an average over several years. And so just like we, you know, recently experienced were some pretty violent swings. We went from a 5% to 100% allocation. And so when you look at a multi-year sequence, history at least, and we're trying to now project what the future is going to hold, which gets a lot more difficult. But when you're looking at a multi-year drought, say a five-year period of time, you invariably have, you know, other years that aren't, you know, as extreme dry. And so that's why it seems counterintuitive. But when you average over that period of time, you pick up a couple of wet years with the drought years. So that's how that's looked at.
Thank you. I knew there was a reason out there. And then the other part is kind of to go with Jurassic Park. My example is earthquake planning. I'm sorry, I have a cold. So we know like what happened in the Northridge earthquake, but to build to prevent it ever happening would make housing completely unaffordable. So we pick a middle ground, and I think it is our agency's job to pick what's a reasonable buffer and plan for that and ask our customers to pay for that. We will never have 100% certainty, but you know, if we had 100% certainty, we may have stopped building when Newhall was established how many years ago. So there's a middle ground, and I think of that in terms of the cost for earthquake retrofits in earthquake country. So thank you. Sorry for my voice.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. So I do have some questions as a follow-up to the discussion that Director Brunstein started. But first, I just wanted to make a couple comments. I did want to say that there are a couple areas where I felt there was a improvement to this version of the water supply verification. One of which is the whole 26% overage that always kind of irked me, that was publicly thrown out. it's a little quieter. I know it doesn't seem as prominent in the document, and I know internally it's important to assess for that and have that buffer. But it always bothered me when it was always stated like, here, we're giving you extra 26% water. And I know you were saying that that's not your belief of how it, but that's just always the way I saw it. So I appreciate that it's not being conveyed in that manner anymore. So thank you for that. Also, I appreciate the inclusion of the language in the conclusion section that refers to complying with the Model Water Efficiency Landscape Ordinance standards and any other water conservation measures. And I appreciate Director Marks last time offering up that language to include in the document, because I know that was irking me as well, that we didn't have anything related to that in there. So thank you for that. I did want to say that I believe we normally get a copy of the letter that goes to either the city or the county as a cover letter to the document, which wasn't included this time, but I just want to state that I hope that in that cover letter, similarly to what we saw last time in the county, it's that language is also added in there, the encouragement to adhere to those standards. So overall, I just always appreciate, even though these are kind of standard documents that we see over and over again now, I always appreciate seeing them over and over, because each and every time I read through it, I feel like something else clicks for me, like a puzzle piece falls into place for me. And there were a couple of the tables that seemed maybe new to me, or maybe were redone, that I'm going to pull out and put in like a reference document because they were really good. And I appreciated having all that information consolidated for us. So to my questions, I also have some of the reservation that Director Bronstein shared where, some of the scenarios that are presented using some of the assumptions kind of makes it a little close and uncomfortable in terms of where supply meets demand. But I also know that this document explains that there was a lot of conservative figures and assumptions were used. And I'm wondering if you wanted to take a moment to explain some of those conservative assumptions that were made or things that weren't included because there's no full commitment to both on the supply and demand side to speak to those issues. And then let's see. The last thing I just wanted to say was, I think what you were talking about in terms of reassessing the demand trend, showing that as though growth has happened, demand has come down. It'll be really interesting to see if that trend continues given the continued growth we have. So we're a little bit of a unique valley in the terms that we still have so much growth left. So I'd be interested when that happens, I'll be paying attention to that. But back to the question about conservative figures, if you could just address that and then I'm done. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Director Armitage. There are quite a few on the cover letter. That has become our standard now. And so unless we change it majorly, probably won't see it again. But that feedback was well received. A few of the things on the conservative figures, I think you touched on one. So the demand, maybe we'll handle demand side first from the conservative standpoint. One is the MeWello bump, right? So there's a 26% MeWello non-achievement built into the demand. So the demands are inflated by that amount because we went through and we did a study at a point in time that looked at the recent construction that were under the new standard. And there's been evolution of that standard as it's gone forward as well. But when we looked at it, it wasn't performing. And so when the staff saw that, they're like, well, we need to make sure that we are conservative in that projection so that we don't undercut ourselves there and then pursue trying to get meeting the standard. So that's one aspect. I think the second aspect that hasn't been built into the numbers yet are the new water conservation regulations. So as you guys are all aware, there's a whole new set of regulations that will be target based for our agency. We're not positive on how that's going to play out yet, but you'll see us doing a lot of work next year when we move through and do a update of our water use efficiency strategic plan and also work on modeling the demand side of what that looks like. But I think the numbers that we're starting to see is it's basically another 15% cut off where we stand today. And so is that achievable? That is a big question on our minds right now. That's going to be the target. And, how aggressively this agency pursues that target is going to be a discussion of much policy debate, I suspect, going forward. So those are the two things on the demand side that are looking at, and the trends are supporting kind of that trend in demand going down. Now, is it going to stay that way? We're going to have to make sure that we continue to watch that. On the supply side, we've been fairly conservative as well. We haven't built in Scythe Reservoir, for example. We talk about it in the report. But we haven't put it in the table yet. And so that's another supply that's out there that could be available for the agency going forward, but we're conservatively not putting it in the table. I would put the Delta Conveyance Facility in that same same component, that the water supply delivery reliability report that I mentioned earlier shows a different outcome when you have the Delta conveyance facility. So those numbers, those percentage numbers go up in certain year types because the Delta conveyance facility is built. But we've not included that. So I think those are the main ones. I don't know if I'm drawing a blank on others, but so groundwater banking. So we haven't built in, we've built in some groundwater banking. It's basically the expansion of some of our existing programs. The AVEC program is not built into the projections as well yet. But I think it was mentioned earlier, that's why as an agency, we need to continue to evaluate these programs, see how they fit into our portfolio. And it's investing on behalf of the community to make sure that we have, you know, the supply reliability that is going to serve the community going forward. So,
thank you.
I think I'll stop there.
Vice President Ozaski.
thank you, Mr. Stone, and General Manager Sam Neal for the presentation. So this water supply verification was reviewed by the Water Resources and Watershed Committee, and I would like to motion to approve adopting this this resolution.
Very good. We have a motion. Director Cooper, you second? I don't have any public comment cards, but we have any public comment on it before we take the vote?
We do not. But can I just remind the board real quick? Anybody who is on board, I believe it's fixed now, but it might not be. So if you go out and you go back in, it should reset it. Okay. And there is no public comment, President Martin.
Any further discussion by the boards? I think none. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Orzechowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item is approved, and that's resolution number SCV-395.
Very good. Thank you, board. Thank you, staff. Move on to item 6.3. Approve a purchase order to Salinas Valley Ford for fleet replacement vehicles. Our presenter tonight is Jesus Martinez Ramirez. Mr. Ramirez.
Thank you. Please. Good evening, board members, staff, and members of the public. My name is Jesus Martinez Ramirez, and I'm the fleet and warehousing supervisor. As mentioned, this item is a request to purchase 37 vehicles as part of our compliance plan with the new CARB regulation. And this is really the outcome of the conversations we've been having for the past couple months about the regulation and the impacts to the regulation. During the presentation, we'll just kind of briefly go over how did we identify these vehicles, you know, why there's a need to replace them, and then also what are some of the next steps forward that the agency will be looking at. So next slide, please. So we've been having a conversation about this new regulation for CARV and how it goes into effect in January of 2024. After the regulation was approved, we started working with one of the agency's consultant, Certiberta Energy, to help us with some compliance planning. And then the vendor's also Aqua's preferred partner when it comes to electrifying fleets. And so that's where some of this data analysis came from. Next slide, please. When looking at the data from our telematics as well as our fleet management system, we identified 37 vehicles that we believe are of high priority to our operations. And the table on the slide just shows what are some of the operational risks if some of these vehicles were transitioned to electric or hydrogen or other zero emissions. And that just gives a breakdown based on the weight. Next slide, please. When looking at those vehicles, we estimated what the cost of replacing those would be. So this gives a breakdown of the estimated cost, which we utilize past purchases as well as current trends in the market to come up with those budgets. And then also we included a little bit of a a wiggle room there for any additional costs due to price increases over model years or any other supply chain issues that we might encounter over the next couple months. Next slide, please. So when looking at these vehicles, we work with our consultant to identify them, and this is the how we came up with the list. The vehicles were identified by looking at what vehicles would need to be replaced over the next 5 to 7 years, also which vehicles had high engine wear, and then also the age of the vehicles as well as mileage, and also which vehicles would need to have towing capabilities, since we know that towing is a challenge when it comes to range for zero emission vehicles. So those are the three main criteria that we looked to identify those 37 vehicles. Next slide, please. As we've discussed, the challenges that come with implementing the regulation really center around these kind of four main points: is the limitations of the technology, the batteries, and the range of the vehicles is just not there, and their capabilities to tow our trailers and equipment is very limited. A big one for us is also vehicle availability. Most of the vehicles that are out there would not fit our needs, and the vehicles that this CARB says that are available, they're from startups that it's unclear if they'll be around to honor and service those vehicles. There's a lot of uncertainty still within the charging infrastructure side when it comes to which charging port vehicles we'll be using, and the industry is now starting to go to the Tesla charging port. So we see that on the light duty, medium and heavy duty still a little bit far behind, but we anticipate that they'll probably follow suit as well. And then again, we know from talking with other fleets, there's a lot of challenges that come with the actual construction, working with the utility to bring enough power to the sites, as well as future proofing those sites to be able to have enough capacity for future needs for these larger vehicles. So because of those challenges, we believe that this purchase would allow our agency to really buy 5 to 7 years for the market to stabilize, for more vehicles to be available that it can actually meet our operational needs, and then also for time to really design and build out the infrastructure that we need to support these vehicles. Next slide, please. If we replace these vehicles now with gasoline vehicles, then we are able to transition our fleet at a more reasonable timeline. And this shows that we would be replacing 12 medium and heavy duty vehicles with zero emissions over the next decade. And this doesn't include all of the vehicles, right? This just applies to medium and heavy duty. We'll still be looking at other passenger vehicles that could be transitioned, because we know those can easily be transitioned to zero emissions. Next slide, please. Again, there's a lot of savings, right, with not having to transition right away. This would allow us to have lower or less expensive investments in the infrastructure right away, so that we can, again, space it out over multiple fiscal years to be able to, again, design and build out the infrastructure for our facility. So this is what we would anticipate needing as far as chargers to be able to support those vehicles across our facilities. Next slide. So next steps, the recommendation is to replace the 37 vehicles to buy the agency time, provide savings, and then also to develop the infrastructure. We'll continue the planning for the charging infrastructure. We'll submit our compliance report. We'll continue to work with our partners with Aqua and other industry groups, as well as our consultant, since we'll have representation in the CARV implementation groups through Aqua, Tara Verde and myself sitting on those, and provide feedback to CARV. When we went out to request for quotes, we sent it out to 25 vendors. There was 8 submittals, 6 of those were complete. And based on when we looked at the proposals, we believe that Salinas Valley Ford provides the best terms and pricing for this purchase of the vehicles. And we know that there's still a lot of uncertainty, right, in the supply chain. So we anticipate that the delivery of these vehicles will occur over multiple fiscal years, just because there's still delays in manufacturing. And that concludes my report, and I'm available for any questions.
Right. Thank you for your presentation. I don't have any public comment cards, April. So do we have any members of the public online who wish to make a comment on this item?
We do not.
Very good. We open it to board discussion on the recommended action. Vice President Ozahosky.
Thank you, Mr. Ramirez, for your presentation. A couple of questions. So one, CARB has established the Truck Regulations Implementation Group to collect stakeholder feedback. Will the FOA committee be briefed on major comments submitted to TRIG?
Yeah, we can provide definitely updates to the committee on that.
Okay. And then the 37 trucks that are going to be vehicles that are going to be replaced, what's our plan on recouping those costs of those 37 vehicles that we have right now? Well, how do we plan on
As far as the surplus?
Yeah.
We'll be phasing out those vehicles, right? From the moment of delivery to the in-service, it will still be a delay because we still need to add lights and other upfits. So it won't be right away, but we'll just follow our surplus policy as far as sending those vehicles out for surplus through auction.
Can you remind me in the board, what is our surplus policy for those vehicles?
So we look at a couple different options. So there's public auction options that we have that we can send those vehicles. Those are public auctions, right, that anybody could bid. And then we also now notify our staff as well where they can place those bids if they wanted to look at that or any other furniture as well.
How much do you think we can anticipate in selling these vehicles for, based on past historical times we submit vehicles to GovDeals or any of these auction sites?
Not a lot. A lot of it is because, right, they won't be able to really be used in California. So our auction vendors have let us know that usually they go out of state or out of the country. Half of them go out of state and half out of the country. So it really depends what's going on in the market. Sometimes it's pennies on the dollar. And sometimes it's a strong market like right now, right, as with high interest rates. So I think all of the historical data has really been thrown off after COVID when it comes to the vehicles.
Okay. And last questions regarding the Tesla charging ports. I believe Tesla has an open source policy on all their chargers. So there's no really license to build those units. Is that what you think the industry is shifting to, using Tesla chargers throughout the country because it's, you know, quote unquote, you know, free technology that can be used?
We anticipate that, yes, most of the manufacturers, if not all, will have to, right? They won't be able to afford to be the only one out, right? And after Ford and GM announced that they were going to do that, everybody else has to follow suit. So we anticipate that. We know that the charging manufacturers are also looking at that as well, and everybody now is trying to catch up, and we'll start to see that in model year 25.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ramirez. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you.
Dr. Cooper.
Thank you. Good presentation.
Thank you.
This is something none of us are looking forward to, is having to switch all our vehicles over in the next few years. The charger you showed on there, which is kind of the high output for big trucks, $177,000 is what that charger would cost for one charger?
Is that is a conservative estimate. So we know from LA County Sanitation that they purchased a heavy duty truck for $400,000 and the charger itself was $200,000.
Oh, so, my gosh.
Yeah, it could be anywhere from $60,000 to $200,000. It really depends. Each project is unique, right? Depending on how much power is at that facility, how far it's going to have to go, right? How much you're going to trench, and then also how much conduit you're going to have to put into the ground. So, it's really the... We've heard from our consultant too, right, that even with the smaller chargers, right, he's seen prices from anywhere from $2,000 to $100,000. It just varies. The $100,000 is an anomaly, right, but it could happen. It just depends on where the charger is placed and the site and whatever's on the ground. So,
the other question I had is your F550 and 650s,
mm-hmm.
Are you going to order those as gas instead of diesel or?
Yes.
That's going to be gas, not CNG.
No, not CNG. And that's because of, in addition, right, the regulation is just for CARV. We still have to comply with other regulations, and that would be from the Air District, South Coast AQMD. And their regulation says that we need to purchase CNG vehicles instead of diesel. However, they haven't received certification on the CNG conversion, so that's why we can still buy gasoline. It's the same engine, yeah. Right? It's just they add a prep kit there to be able to run on CNG.
Good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Director Armitage.
I just wanted to say that I'm glad that you'll be on the CARB work group and be able to provide direct feedback to them as hopefully discussions evolve and policy evolve. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
Director Bronstein.
I'm on a roll tonight. So thank you so much for this presentation. And I read through everything and I totally understand how we are very committed to this zero emission and also how much it's going to cost. And unfortunately, this cost is going to be paid by all of us, the customers of our customers specifically, but I mean, this is all over California. So this is going to be a tough one. I had just a few little questions, mm-hmm. and I know that this will show my knowledge of trucks. However, is there a hybrid option? I know that probably wouldn't qualify for the zero emission, but it would definitely help towards our greenhouse gas emission reduction.
That is correct. Yeah. So because of the regulation, it wouldn't count towards the... when we replace vehicles, we look at all those things, right? We look at, can it be transitioned to electric? Can we look at a hybrid option? And then also importantly is, can we transition to a smaller vehicle? So we've done that. It's called right sizing, right? So, for example, we moved our treatment plant operators from a full-size pickup to a compact vehicle because we know that they're not towing or carrying heavy payload. So we can achieve emission savings as well as fuel savings and cost savings by looking at that. Transitioning, if that's not available, what's the hybrid option? And if that's not available, then can we go to a smaller vehicle?
Okay. So we didn't look really at hybrids, or we just kind of decided that since it doesn't
because it wouldn't qualify for, we wouldn't comply with the requirements of the regulation.
Even if we, because I guess what I'm asking is, could we buy these 37, but in hybrid option?
Not for these engines.
Okay. No. Yeah. That's kind of what I was asking. Yeah. And then my last question was, what do we call them? Light vehicles, small vehicles, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. what about those? What are we looking at there? Because over there, for sure, I know that we do have hybrids and electric, like that should be able to be compatible.
Yeah, yeah. We started that process by introducing the Ford Lightning into our fleet. So now we have one at each location that serves as a pool vehicle. We've also introduced the e-transit with our IT department. So they use that because they have short commutes right from one location to the other. It's typically planned jobs, right, where they know where they're going so they can charge. And we've started adding the a level 2 charger at each location so that will allow us to start testing out more vehicles and introducing them in a manner that's not going to provide any operational risks or less operational risks.
Okay, thank you so much. And I'm going to echo the Director Armitage's sentiments. I'm glad that you're going to be on this TG whatever.
Man.
another acronym.
Yeah. Any feedback that, we can provide, you know, even if it's small, right? And it might be a big change over time. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you.
Vice President Gutzeit.
I second the great presentation. Always like the planning on this. Did you say at the very end that we expect supply issues with the gas trucks, or is that supply issues with these large potential future large EV vehicles? Can you clarify what you said the delay is?
Yeah, both on the manufacturing of these vehicles is still not back to pre-COVID levels, right? We know that they just had a automotive union strike, right? We still don't know what those effects of those of that strike is, what it's going to do to this. We also know that the manufacturers are allocating more resources to their vehicles that provide higher return for them. So that's away from vehicles that are for fleet and commercial that are lower profit margins for them. So there could be some delays because of that. So, and then again, we don't know what, you know, what other major change will happen. So,
Vice President Ozaski.
One more follow-up question, and I'm sure it's being addressed already by you and your team. Are we working on some drafts for protocols and procedures on how to utilize these electric vehicles for on-call people or some of our technicians that take vehicles home?
So we're not at the point of on-call yet, just because there's a lot of uncertainty, right? If the vehicle's at home, where does that person charge? So right now we're just in assignments that don't, they can most of the time go a full week without having to charge. So those is usually the office pool assignment. So, but yeah, we'll work through those things. And we know that for a lot of our staff, this is going to be the first electric vehicle that they are going to be driving, right? So there is a learning period there, right? As far as teaching them that you have to plan, right? Your assignment, you have to make sure that you charge your vehicle. And they're a lot faster and a lot heavier, right? So you have to be a little bit more engaged when you're driving these vehicles, because they can be very fast. And you know, you just have to be mindful of those things. But there's also a lot of benefits. They're a lot quieter. They're a lot more comfortable. So they can also go to one of the job sites they can use power, right? It's just a big battery that they can tap into. So there's a lot of possibilities with those vehicles. It's just, you know, we just have to find the right assignments where those vehicles will be successful.
Now, we're just, I think a lot of us are just worried. But I know we're in good hands. I know you're going to build, you know, good protocols here and have spare parts on site, just because those vehicles will require HMI displays inside, you know, telling the driver how long they have on that battery and where's the next available charging station based in our facility. So a lot of work with our facilities too. Okay, I think we're in good hands. Thank you for your presentation. Back to you, President Martin.
Right. Director Peterson.
Yes, we discussed this a couple of times at the Finance Committee, and very good questions tonight also. With that, I would like to make the motion, as said in the board packet here on the agenda, that recommend the purchase order to be placed for the vehicles.
Okay. Before we move forward with the motion, Director Brownstein has her hand up.
Oh, I was going to second.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Brownstein.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Vice President Ozahowski.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does
pass. Thank you for your support.
Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, staff, for the work you've done to get us to this point. We can move on to item 6.4, approve a contract renewal with Systems and Software, Inc. for the Enquesta customer service system maintenance and support. Our presenter tonight, I thought was going to be Rochelle, but I think it's more likely.
Yeah. Chris.
Okay.
So I'm here presenting. I'm joined by actually Kathleen Wilson, our customer service manager. She's in the audience there. So any questions I can't answer, she can answer. So again, good evening, board of directors, President Martin. My name is Chris Perez. I'm the director of technology services. I'm here presenting it's an annual renewal of our support and maintenance contract with systems and software. More specifically, the products we have is called Enquesta. So next slide, please. So I want to give you some history. This item brought to the committee a couple weeks back, and we thought important enough to bring it to the board here to talk about. So again, I'm really thankful to be here talking to y'all. So Enquesta, again, is our enterprise-level, cloud-based customer information system. Those of you can remember, 6 years ago, when we started this organization, we had three of everything, including customer service systems. So in the last handful of years, we've been able to consolidate all our systems into one. So as of May 2022, we finally finished the last consolidation, which also included not only consolidating and moving to the cloud and this enterprise level solution, but also we also completed the universal bill format, a new online customer portal, and a new third party payment platform. So, next slide, please. So developments. So in 2022, we were awarded a $2.1 million grant from the Bureau of Reclamation. And this was for the installation of AMI meters. Those of you who don't know, AMI are automated infrastructure meters. What that allows you to do is to send data directly to the office, as opposed to the old school way where you drove around in a truck and you've manually read a meter. Now with the technology, it can beam it back to towers and back into the office. So with that $2.1 million, there's a condition. There's two conditions, actually. Number one is to install 20,000 AMI-compatible meters. Then the second condition is the one listed here, is that we must have near real-time consumption data available to our customers in the portal. And all this needs to be done by June 2025. Next slide, please. So where were we at right now? The second, 2022, our operations team kicked off an AMI meter changeout program. I believe they're in phase three right now as we speak. So I believe when they finish phase three, they'll be done with about 60%. So 60% of all our meters will be AMI. In February 2023, we brought to this board a project called the Meter Data Management System. And what that is that's the component, the critical component to be able to get that AMI real-time data, both into our customer service system and into our customer portal. We kicked off that project after the board approved it. We kicked it off in May. We've been working on it now for 7 to 8 months. We're right in the middle of it. I think I mentioned to the committee, F&A committee, that we're going to be bringing back kind of a showcase of that tool and what's coming out of that in next quarter, first quarter of 2024. So what I want to share with you now are eight categories. This is kind of a simple breakdown of that support and maintenance contract. So I'll go through the eight categories. The next slide, please. So support. So support is business continuity. This is the regular maintenance, the refreshes of the system. This is important to upkeep and necessary because it helps us avoid disruption. It helps us avoid errors, and it upholds the agency's reputation of excellent customer service. And as you can imagine, we're all customers of the board and myself here, but we all can access our customer information anytime we want. So these systems have to be operational 24/7. Next slide, please. We can go back. So just illustrated there, there's a screenshot on the right. That's an example of a customer bill. You're probably all familiar with that. That's also an output of the customer service system. And on the left side, that's a screenshot of the interface our customer service agents use on a daily basis to interact and understand and manage the customer's information. Next slide, please. Next component here, we have hosting and Oracle. Hosting, so once upon a time, you know, everything, you know, we had applications, they all lived in a computer in an office somewhere. And nowadays, everything's transitioned to the cloud. So hosting, what that means is that SNS, the company, SNS servers host our application. And there's a humongous value to hosting and cloud solutions because number one, from a security standpoint, things are constantly being monitored, maintained, updated, patched, et cetera. And number two is the scalability. If you can imagine an example, if you had a Ford Fiesta, you had a Ford Fiesta and you needed to tow a trailer or RV or something like that. And in the cloud solution, now you can just click some buttons and add all that horsepower and all that that bandwidth and all that muscle instantaneously. And that's what I mean by scalability. If you're running a lower performance, you can make changes and modify that. Also noted in here is Oracle. Now Oracle is one of the world's safest databases. It's a best in class database. And Oracle is an important component to this because we have several licenses that cover both our production environment, our backups, as well as our trade environment. So Oracle licensing is an important part of this. Next slide, please. Third-party integrations. So as part of our customer-centric kind of approach is making sure we have these systems and these data systems that can handle all these various things we do in this organization. So illustrated here, depicted, I have some screenshots. We have some conservation application screenshot. We have the customer portal, which is on the right side. And then below, we have the customer phone and online billing portal, as well as other integrations. We have Cognos report writers that our folks internally use for reporting and sending information over to the finance department, other exercises within the conservation department. So there's a hefty amount of third-party integrations, and they're critically important to our operations. Next slide, please. Security. Like I mentioned two slides ago, that Oracle is kind of one of the world's safest databases. There's a lot of security involved in Oracle. It's built into it. That's what's one of the good things about it. It's built into it. But in addition to that, there are also proprietary add-ons. As an agency and as being, again, critical and protective of our customers' information, we're using a best-in-class database. But in addition to that, we've also added additional layers of security. So not only are we adding, you know, we're using the base security, but we're all adding additional. But on top of that, we're also added additional encryptions to our customers' information. So it also includes security is disaster recovery and proprietary Oracle security. Next slide, please. This is something we should all be familiar with. This is our customer portal. So as mentioned in 2022 is it modified and it looks like it looks now. This is where us as customers, we manage our accounts, we view pay, set notifications, alerts. And here you can also analyze your consumption history relative to weather information. So this is where, a couple slides from now, we'll talk about it, but this is where the MDMS, AMI data will feed into here. So you'll have access in this space into your near real-time data. Next slide, please. Mobile work order solution. So that's a big project we completed about a year and a half ago, I think it was now. And so what that does, it bridges the gap of communication between the folks in the field and the folks in the office and the office in the field. So customers now, when they call and contact customer service, they're able to initiate the work order, and that's instantaneously sent out to the field. And the field technicians on an iPad are able to see, you know, what work they need to be has to be done or what needs to be done. So ultimately, that's it's going to improve customer satisfaction, because not only are we more responsive to a customer's issue, but we're also gaining operational and cost efficiencies. Next slide, please. AMI. So the next two slides. So we have AMI and we have MDMS is the slide after this one. And they kind of work kind of together. So AMI is, like I mentioned earlier, is that automatic metering infrastructure. That's the way the data can come into the office. And to get it into the system, into the customer information system, we need this particular component here. So what's illustrated on the graphics here is a screenshot. On the right side are a certain batch of meters on certain AMI technologies. On the left side, there's another brand of AMI technologies. And all it's doing is illustrating kind of all the meters out in the field. And I think there's might be some graphics there too, illustrating the towers that are collecting that data. So the next slide. So MDMS, that's the meter data management system. That's the project we're working on right now. So the meter data management system takes in the different, we have two different AMI systems that bring in the automatic reads. So we have the master meter system and the census system. So all those come into this, called middleman, I guess, or middle device there. It's a communication, it bridges the communication of the AMI information. It cleans, it analyzes that data, it validates it, then it sends it over to the customer information system, as well as the customer portal. So that's an important component because there are also additional integrations. You can see there's a thing called HealthWatch. That's just a system that's monitoring the health of the MDMS system. There's integrations with our GIS, geographic information systems. And then there's also an integration with some weather import information. So all that's working collectively together to get us a near real-time data into our entire information systems. So next slide, please. So what we have here is just a comparison. This is kind of an easy comparison. If you can look back to last year's contract renewal and this year's contract renewal, you see there is a 5% increase line to line, and there are two additional items that were added. Those are the items like I mentioned that we're working on right now, the CSI AMI system and the MDMS. Those are projects right now in progress. Again, those are projects that are have conditions that are they're meeting conditions of the $2.1 million grant project we're working on now. So next slide, please. So to conclude, we're requesting that the board of directors authorize the general manager to enter into a one-year maintenance and support agreement with SNS in the amount of $537,320 for Inquesta customer service system maintenance and support.
Thank you, Chris. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on the presentation?
Double check here. We do not.
Very good. Then we can open for discussion or motion. Director Brunstein.
Thank you so much for your presentation. It was really great. So is this a forever situation? Like we're always going to need to renew Inquesta? Or a different platform?
Yeah, for now. Yeah, I mean, it took us a few years to get into Inquesta. So again, we're finishing up this meter data management project. But ultimately, a customer service system, you know, it's not something that you change on a year-to-year basis because it's an enterprise endeavor. It's a huge multi-year project, as you can imagine. I think we're all familiar with when we moved into the Oracle financial system, it took us years to do that. We did planning and evaluations and all that. So it's not something you change on a year-to-year basis.
Right. So like, I guess my question is, so this is, there's going to be the same ask is going to be coming back a year from now and a year from now.
It's a renewal. Yeah.
It's a renewal.
Annual renewal.
And there's no way of like, you know, sign up for 5 years and you get a discount or something like that.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Not that I'm familiar with. Okay. Maybe Kathleen knows more than I do.
She's probably going to just run up there and say, nope.
Good evening. Yes, it is not anything that we've pursued previously, but it is on the docket to discuss with them for the upcoming several years. We had talked about possibly proposing maybe like a 3-year renewal. So we could just do this once every 3 years.
Thank you.
Vice President Ozahowski.
And Mr. Perez, so funds for this renewal with the anticipated 5% increase were included in the budget for 23-24 and 24-25, and that includes the CSI, AMI, and SmartWorks MDMS. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you. Director Armitage.
Thank you. Thanks for your presentation. You look taller today. I keep wanting to see if you're stepping on something.
You always see me on the screen.
I'm like, wow, he's tall. Okay. Just a few comments. I think I made them during committee, but I just want to say them out here too. You mentioned cybersecurity. I always want to say thank you for focusing on what we can do to keep our customer data safe. So thank you and keep doing that. I appreciate the efficiencies that are probably happening through the mobile work order function. So I think that's really great. And lastly, I'm just excited that our customers will have the ability starting in 2025 to be able to go on, log on, and see near real-time water usage. I think that's going to be a really cool tool for them to use in conservation efforts. So that's it. Thank you.
Any other discussion from the board? Well, I'd entertain a motion for approval of the item. Director Peterson.
I would make the motion to, as recommended, to authorize the general manager to enter into a one-year maintenance agreement and support agreement with SNS in the amount of $537,323 for Inquesta customer service system maintenance and support.
Director Bronstein?
I'll second.
Director Bronstein seconds the motion. Unless there's any further discussion, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Colley.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Wojciechowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to item 6.5, approve receiving and filing of September 2023 monthly and FY23-24 first quarter financial report, July to September 2023. And this time it is Rochelle Patterson. Thank you, Ms. Patterson.
Hi, good evening. So this is the first quarter fiscal year 23-24, so July through September. Next slide. Just a few highlights. There are several more in your packet, but just in that quarter, we received the rating upgrade from S&P. We adopted the POS successfully and sold the 2023 revenue bonds. We reviewed several financial scenarios, received approval and revised purchase policy and a surplus policy. We received approval of a janitorial services contract. And also received approval of revised ratepayer advocate process. Next slide. So looking over our revenues, these are our total revenues. Our water sales, which are in blue, and our non-operating revenues, which are in orange. Total water sales for the quarter were $25.8 million, which is a reduction of about 25% compared to our budget number of $34.2 million. Actual water sales are lower than budgeted. What we believe is based on conservation efforts, slower growth than we had projected, and weather. The agency reported that we received about 6.02 inches of rainfall in the reporting period. Next slide. This is our water sales production. So total water produced for retail consumption from July through September of 2023 was 18,532 acre feet. And that's comprised of 3,318 acre feet of groundwater and the remainder 15,215 acre feet of surface water. Total water sales were 16,853 acre feet. That's based on billing date, which is a decrease of about 18% from the budgeted water projection of 20,675 acre feet for the first quarter. Next slide. Our water sales revenue, this is by customer class. And as by previously reported, water sales were under budget by about 25%, but that consists of all of our customer classes. The biggest customer class, which is about 63% of our total water sales revenue, comes from residential water sales. We were under budget for the quarter by 22%, which is $4.1 million. And in landscaping and irrigation water sales, we were under budget by 35%, which is 2.5 million. All other water sales were under budget by 22%, which was 1.8 million. Our total number of billing connections added through September of 2023 was 96 out of a total of 1,068 that we've projected for the year. Next slide. Our 1% property tax revenues. We typically don't budget for property tax revenues until October because most of the time we don't receive any or very little. But we did receive almost $1 million, $986,000 in the first quarter property tax. Next slide. For our facility and retail capacity fees in the first quarter, we received $2.2 million facility capacity fees. The regional fees collected were $2.1 million and about $95,000 in retail capacity fees. Our total budget for that quarter was $394,000. So we definitely were over budget in that quarter in our capacity fee revenue. Next slide. This slide just tells us where majority of our fees are being collected and the major developers. Next slide. Our other revenues, we already talked about our property tax, which is in the blue. We talked about our facility capacity fees, which is in orange. So our other miscellaneous revenue is in that green bar. And other miscellaneous revenue includes grants, other reimbursements, our sell leases and rental income, our investment revenues. We received about $2.6 million, approximately about 19% under budget of our $3.2 million budget. And kind of similar to our FCFs, as shown earlier, our grants and reimbursements, we annualize, we have a budget for the year, we divide it by 12. It's never known when they're going to come in. So it just so happens that our grants and reimbursements were less than we had budgeted for the quarter. Next slide. For our investment portfolio through September, we have $307 million in short and long-term investments. Our agency investment advisor has been investing portions of our liquid assets as well as reinvesting when existing investments mature. The agency's average market yield to maturity is 4.97%. And in the middle graph, we always like to show our laddering effect. We like to have kind of a nice smooth ladder. So when investment matures, we can invest in it long term, and then that just keeps coming down in the ladder. Although the first year, as you see, that we have about 11.3% of our investments in liquid assets, and that's included in the 0 to 3 year bar. And that's mostly needed for our cash flow purposes and also includes a portion of the state water contract ad valorem tax. Next slide. For the capital improvement program for the quarter, in general, expenditures for CIP program depends on bid timing and contract awards, coordination with other agencies, coordination with other projects, staffing levels, and other factors. So for the fiscal year 23-24 PAYGO budget, our total PAYGO budget for the year, as you see, is $76 million. Of that amount, about 4% or $3,143,000 of funds have been expended in the first quarter. And on the debt funded side, we had budgeted $46.7 million, and of that amount, about 11% or $5.1 million in funds have been expended. Next slide. For our operating expenditures for this quarter, our budget was $17,864,000. Oh, I'm sorry. Our actual was $17,864,000 out of our budget of $23,147,000, which is a 23% reduction. Every one of our department operating expense departments were under budget, and that equates to about $5.2 million. Some of the significant activities, we were under budget by 40% through September, about $306,000. That's in the management category, primarily due to timing for clerate litigation and legal expenses, as well as reimbursement for those litigation expenses. In our pumping wells and storage department, we are under budget by 31%, which is about $1.5 million. primarily due to timing of some of those Edison invoices. And in water resources, we are under budget by about 40%, which is $1.1 million. And that's primarily due to conservation program expenses, less than expected, due to lower program participation, And in source of supply, we are under budget by about 94%, which is $590,000. And that's a result of lower firming banking program expenditures due to a wet year. Next slide. As our debt service chart, we made a payment of $30,768 in the first quarter. The principal debt outstanding as of September 30th was $303,948 million, and that does exclude the Valencia Water Division acquisition interfund loan and 1999 accreted interest. Next slide. Our cash position as of September, we have a reserve balance of $121.8 million, restricted cash of $171.2 million, which includes the facility and retail capacity fee funds, the state water project fund, and remaining bond proceeds. Our unrestricted cash of about $20 million, that meets the agency's payment obligations, such as operating expenses, including debt service, payroll expenses, insurance, the CIP PAYGO. Next slide. And then other items that are always in the packet is the statement of revenues and expenses for the month of September, and it also shows the year to date, our investment report, the 3-month cash flow, our debt and cash position, facility capacity fee revenues, or some additional graphs, our 10 largest disbursements, our credit card register, director stipends, and reimbursements. Next slide. And the recommendation is that the Finance Administration Committee recommends that the Board of Directors receive and file the September 2023 monthly and the fiscal year 2023-24 first quarter financial report. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Patterson, for an excellent presentation. Madam Secretary, do we have any public comment on the presentation?
We do not.
We have any board discussion, questions, or comments? Director Bernstein.
Good evening, Ms. Patterson. Thank you for your presentation. I love it, as always. You make it so easy to follow along. My one comment is, and I think I've brought it up in the past, that it seems like our water sales are consistently lower. And I know that we put in there, I think it was what, 15%?
15%.
For conservation. But I think it's time to reevaluate that, because I'd rather have extra money at the end that then we can invest back in CIP, pay whatever it is, than get stuck. I mean, we're kind of lucky because we were down 23%, right, in expenditures. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, I guess, balanced it out. But if not, it wouldn't have been great. So I'd appreciate it if we look at that a little bit more proactively.
Right. And we do use the rate study for the rates to budget our revenues. So we will be coming in the next year or so with our next cost of service study and rates. And we can definitely look into that and look at our conservation rates and make sure we're building in the appropriate amount.
Yeah, because budgets are, want to make sure we have the money. Thanks.
Vice President Ozahowski.
Ms. Patterson, I'm looking at slide 12 of your presentation, the operating expenses, and we were under by $5.2 million. You mentioned that every department was under. Can you expand on that? Is it just delays in purchasing some equipment or in hiring additional personnel? What were the reasons for some of the under budget conditions for, you know, departments such as maybe engineering or administrations or facilities?
Right. So in general, it could be timing, just timing of invoices coming in. Most of our budget is based on an annual budget, and we divide it by 12 unless we know Maybe we know when our insurance invoices come in so we can budget for it in that month. We try to be as accurate as possible, but sometimes it's timing. Some of it could be attributed to our lower water sales as well, because we could be purchasing less chemicals because there's less demand, less power because we don't have to pump as much because we're not selling as much water. So there is some of that savings that is because we sold less water, so less revenue. And the other one could just be that just timing of invoices, timing of services, if they didn't come in the first quarter as they were anticipated.
Okay, understood. Thank you. Back to you, President Martin.
Any other discussion or comment from the board? Very good. I would entertain a motion for receive and file.
I'll do it.
Director Brownstein.
I won't second this time. I'll make a motion. I was not a role for seconding, but I'll make the motion to receive and file.
I'll second.
All right. Director Mark, second. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Yes.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Vice President Ozuhowski.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item does pass.
Thank you.
Very good. We can move on to the last item under action items, and that's 6.6. Consider and approve issuing a request for proposals to remodel the existing SCV Water Agency boardroom. And a rare thing tonight, our presenter tonight is our board secretary, April Jacobs. Madam Secretary.
Remember to breathe. Okay, I'm watching everybody else give their presentations tonight. I'm like, how are they so calm? Okay. Good evening, members of the board, staff, and public. Tonight, I am here to present item 6.6, consider and approve issuing a request for proposals to remodel the existing SCV Water Agency boardroom. Next slide, please. So, updates to the boardroom over the years. Since late 1994, upgrades to the boardroom have consisted of the following: new chairs for the board in public, updated dais, new carpet, and updated audiovisual. Next slide, please. SCV Water boardroom past and present uses. So then the boardroom had a divider in the middle of the room, creating two separate rooms for use by staff during the day and the board at night. Both rooms could be rearranged and used for several different kinds of events and meetings. Next slide, please. Such as board meetings, committee meetings, staff meetings, employee events and functions, and landscape classes. So buildings and grounds would constantly be rearranging the room for meetings because it was utilized so much for so many different meetings. This room was the very definition of a multi-purpose room. Next slide, please. So presently, the boardroom is solely used for board meetings, the GSA board meeting, F&A committee meetings, executive staff meetings, and miscellaneous meetings, which are very rare. Due to the hybrid option and the room needing to stay as is for the multiple cameras, this room does not get rearranged. So if a meeting in this room did need to happen, then it would need to be used as is. There is currently no versatility to this room. Next slide, please. So we looked at three different options. We looked at option one, which is leave the boardroom the same and update the dais, add new carpet and chairs, and redo the walls. But this option does not give us the versatility we were looking for and does not maximize the current space. We looked at option two, which was to increase the room. So we looked at taking the wall right behind President Martin and Vice President Gutzeit and Ozuhowski and pushing it out towards the pillars in the back, towards the opposite. So if you were, for those that are online, if you were walking down the hallway and you were coming into the boardroom, if you turn to the right, pushing it back, that wall all the way back to the other side. But we, after talking about it, we realized it would be more costly, involve a more expensive design and construction to move existing and permanent walls. So then we looked at option three, but I want to note that at some point in the future, we hope that all the locations could eventually be consolidated in one location. But at this time, that would be several years away. So these are our options. So option three, which is what we're presenting tonight. Next slide, please. So staff met with management and the board present to review the cost and discuss the options as the proposal was developed. The board president then established an ad hoc committee, and it consisted of President Martin, Vice President Skutzite and Ozohosky, and Director Cooper. Staff and the ad hoc committee discussed the options and decided the best option that would minimize cost, maximize space, and increase functionality of the current boardroom is the one being presented tonight. Next slide, please. So what would change? The board dais would be moved to the other end of the room. So I'm going to do a little walking around here to show you guys what I'm talking about. Okay, so if you were walking down the hallway, when we walk in currently, we walk in into the right of us is the board dais. But now what we're proposing is that when you walk in, that the dais would now be right here in this whole space right here. So you would it would be from the public, from anybody who's online, it would be in front of the conservation garden. That's where it would be. You would be looking at. The board table would be updated to a curved shape, giving a better visibility of your fellow board members. The tabletop for the board would be a granite top. So that curved shape is going to make a huge difference for you. So no longer are you going to have to look over kind of the side to see if your fellow board members might be thinking. Now you'll have a nice little angle that will give you a better view, which is really going to be nice for you, I think. Two TVs would be positioned behind the board table and one on the side of the wall. Again, I'm going to do a little show and tell here. So there'll be a table or a TV right here. We're going to expand it out and have another TV that will be right here. So we'll have two. And then, of course, we'll have the one over here that might be a little bit bigger than what we've got now. Next slide, please. The GM, AGM, and general counsel would remain in the center. Sorry, my voice got a little weird there. The GM, AGM, and general counsel would remain in the center of the room, but located close to the board table. So if you look right now, where Matt and Steve and Joe sit are quite far away from each of you. But when we do the remodel, if it's approved and you want to move forward, you'll be moved a lot closer. They'll be moved a lot closer, which will be very nice. See, look at that. Thank you, Matt. Yes, as Matt showed, but in the opposite direction. Okay, next slide. So a 15-inch monitor will be placed at each of the board members' spots to view PowerPoints. So the 15-inch, as you can see in the PowerPoint, so again, I'm going to walk around. So they'll be positioned right up against the dais, as you can see in the rendering. So this would be strictly for just viewing PowerPoints. The monitor is used for nothing else. An alcove would be added to the back of the room designated for IT. I should just hold on to this and stop taking it off. So I'm going to show you over here. So as you're walking down the hall from the admin building, you're walking into the boardroom. These two cabinets right here will be pushed in and it'll be made into an alcove. And that's where our IT people will sit. Well, Jonathan will sit, which will be real nice for him. Sorry. That's where Jonathan will be. Okay. The coffered area around the ceiling, the track on the floor and the wall and ceiling, the wall divider panels and tile will be taken out and the whole room recarpeted. So when I say that, so this track, if you notice, it goes all the way up and all the way across. That'll come out. Over here, the paneling over on this side, this is where those panels are stored, is in this cabinet right here. This will come out. The tile on the floor that nobody really notices because nobody really pays attention to it over there, that'll be gone, which will be nice. So everything will be recarpeted. The double doors in this room, which are right here, which is down as you walk down the hall into the room for those online, would become single doors, which would be up to code and handicapped accessible. Additional cabinets would be added where the door was and the panels were stored for AV equipment and boardroom supplies. So that panel that's being removed and the door that's being removed will add cabinets, which gives us additional space to store board materials as well as AV equipment. The walls would be updated with laminate paneling throughout. And new chairs would be purchased for the board, staff, and public. And so the chairs that you see in the rendering aren't necessarily the chairs we're going to get, but they're just an idea to give the board what it would look like. Next slide, please. A multi-purpose closed session room would be added with a rounded conference room table. So, taking this again. So where would that room start? It would start right here and go straight across. If you look at the space that's right here, that's quite a bit of space. That's a lot more than what we have now. Plus the fact, oh, there's so many good positive things with this. I can't even tell you. I'm so excited to share this with you. The wall will be soundproof and we'll have four TVs, which would be placed on both sides of the room. So right now you can see just the two, but IT was thinking that maybe it would be nice if you had four in that room. So there'll be four added. Okay. And then lastly, the HVAC system would be updated in both rooms, new speakers in the ceilings, new lighting and upgraded technology in both rooms, new window coverings, outlets would be at each of your spots as they are now. Nameplates will be added as they are now. So as you see them where they are now, they'll be added to that. Terry, next slide. Yeah, I think we missed something here. Where's my notes here? Well, you know what? We're just going to ad lib it here. Mm-hmm. Okay. So a door will be added between the two. Actually, it's there and I missed it. See? A door. And here I go again. I'm going to walk around. So a door is going to be added into between the two rooms. So that will be, stop it. that will be right here. So where the wall starts right here, there's going to be a door right here. And this will be a soundproof room. I'm definitely not as good as these presentations as Chris was tonight. I was watching him thinking, man, how is he doing that? double doors will be in the room. The double doors by President or Vice President Gutzeit, that'll also become a single door. And the cabinets would be updated for storage and AV equipment. So where that double door is, we're going to add another cabinet that'll go across there, as you can see in the rendering. Okay, now we can go to the next slide. There we go. Lastly, the HVAC system would be updated in both rooms. New speakers. Did I say all this already? Yeah, I did, right? The boards. Okay. Let me go back down. So talked about the nameplates. Okay. And iPads will be set, will still be set out for the board use. So you'll still have the iPads. And you could bring in your computers as well, as some of the directors already do. The board spots will be a little smaller than what you have approximately by about 6 to 7 inches. So if you look at your current table right now, if you take it in closer to probably where your very first outlet is, and then maybe a little bit over on the other outlet and then up a little bit, that's about the size of the tables are going to be. And that's how we're making it work with everybody at the same dais. Next slide, please. Okay. Benefits for remodeling the boardroom. This is where there's many. Directors no longer have their sides or backs to the entry door. GM, AGM, attorney are closer to the board table. IT has a designated working spot for meetings. The board secretary will be sitting at the board dais. Public has a better visibility of the board presentations and audio. A more modern and versatile room. A better functionality and maximization of the space. Public and staff will hear and see presentations by staff better because of the intimacy of the room. The closed session addition offers staff the ability to use the room for meetings during the day. The room becomes a multi-purpose room. The public and staff no longer need to leave the boardroom for closed session. The board has a designated spot for closed session. Could also be used as an overflow space for staff. A functional room to address closed session needs, and the switch from open to closed session would be streamlined. Next slide, please. The process. So we hired a consultant to assist us in planning and looked at a significant amount of samples from the wall paneling to the carpet samples that were within our budget. The rendition of the boardroom that you saw this evening are the recommendations that fit within our budget and that that complement the room, creating a more modern look and feel. Next slide, please. So staff looked at other options for boardroom locations. We looked at Earl Schmidt filtration plant, and that's not easily accessible. We looked at Rockefeller and Summit. They're too small and do not have the space for a boardroom. We looked at Pine Street. It was retrofitted for staff training, so could not be used as a permanent location for a board meeting or for a boardroom. Next slide, please. So financial considerations. Estimated cost for this project would be approximately $750,000, and funds for this project were included in the fiscal year 2023-2024 budget. Next slide, please. So next steps. If the board tonight approves staff to go out for an RFP, staff would post the RFP and bring this item back with a recommendation to the board in January of 2024. Should the board approve moving forward with remodeling the boardroom, construction could start in February of 2024. Board meetings would be held at the Pine Street location, and the Finance and Administration Committee would be held at Summit. Construction would be approximately about 5 to 6 months, but maybe less. Next slide. So I thought that I would show you what the boardroom looks from a different perspective. Go ahead, Terry. So this is what it looks like from the position of where President Martin is looking straight across. And as you can see, there is quite a bit of wasted space. So much space that we don't utilize that could be used during the day for staff or could be used for other things. Next slide, Terry. This is what it will look like after. And as you can tell, we've really utilized every single spot in this boardroom to its maximum. This is a benefit not only to the public, but to staff and to the board. Next slide, please. Oh, go back one, Terry. There we go. I was going to leave it on this. So here's final thoughts. So in closing, the benefits of modernizing this room are numerous, as stated tonight. And when you take into account that we have not invested much into the functionality of this room, this is an opportunity to maximize and update the room, boardroom, to allow for more versatility, not only for the board, but for staff. And the public will then have a better view of the board and presentations given by staff, giving not only a better visual experience, but hearing experience as well. This is an investment into the future of SCV Water. Next slide. So the recommendation is staff is requesting the board of directors approve moving forward to issuing a request for proposals to remodel the existing boardroom. Next slide. So we're available now for questions, and I have Roland Valente from BNG here. I have Rochelle Patterson from finance, Chris Perez from technology, and myself, and of course, Matt. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. As you know, we need to check on public comment on your presentation before we open up for board discussion. So, Jonathan, do you see any public comment?
We do have public comment.
We do or do not?
We do.
All right.
Susie, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. And a quick question for you, April. You said you'd be sitting at the dais. Is when I looked at that after page, that was four panels, four slides ago, it showed a little notepad or something on the right side of the dais. Is that where you would be seated?
That is where I would be, yes, right next to the podium.
Thank you. Everybody will be so lucky to have you around so close.
Thank you.
Does that conclude your comment, Ms. Kaufman?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Any other public comments, Jonathan?
No public comment.
All right. Very good. We can open up to board discussion. Director Colley.
You promised.
I'm going to try to be nice. Having spent much of my military career and then later teaching, doing public speaking, you're the first individual that I can recall in 20 years that's not been glued to the lectern, in which many really capable public speakers will move about. And that for 20 years, it's the first person that's ever moved about. So thank you for that. I actually thought that. Anyway, so you shouldn't be nervous. Lots to like. I particularly like having the monitor that I can't see that monitor very well. Okay, and there's none over here. And having a little one right here would be fantastic. I would like that very, very much. I'm concerned that soundproofing the closed session room will be possible. When you have a door between two rooms, it's very difficult to make a door very soundproof. So it concerns me that we would have that room soundproof. You can make a pretty good soundproof wall. There's ways to construct a soundproof wall that will be pretty good, but a door in the middle of that wall negates much of the ability to build a soundproof wall. So we want to look at that pretty hard. I'm not a fan of the current arrangement where effectively hub and spoke with the GM. This particular GM, I know I watch now and again, he's just biting his tongue because he's like, you know, oh, I want to jump in. And he's very good at not trying to make himself the center of attention. I don't mean that in any negative way. But in years past, the GM and attorney have sat at the dais. And I like that system better, where it's not, this hub and spoke kind of arrangement that at least one past general manager tended to be, where he would speak, a director would speak, he would speak, a different director would speak, he would speak, and it became, it wasn't a meeting of the board of directors. It was more of a hub and spoke. I don't know how else to say that. So I would prefer our attorney and our GM to be up on the dais myself. I want to make sure that when we construct a wall, that we check the codes and make sure that the fire exits are still adequate. Wouldn't want to get ourselves in trouble there. And I was trying to, you tried to give us an idea of how much elbow room we would have. And I tell you, I really like having this much elbow room. I can remember in the past, my neighbor's paperwork is all over here in my space, and I'm trying to keep it. So the amount of elbow room or the amount of workspace that we have is pretty important. And I'd like to have a better idea if what's being proposed would be enough. Anyway, and then the last thing that I had a note is the space behind the president looked in one of these drawings to be pretty tight, where if he tried to push his chair back, he would run into the wall pretty quick. So just want to make sure that we've looked at that and made sure that we have enough comfortable space behind us so that somebody could pass behind us. Anyway, those are my thoughts.
And there's a couple I'd like to, Roland,
please,
could you come up for just a moment? So maybe Roland can address the issue of the space, and he'll tell you exactly how much space you're losing, so you know, at the table. And then he could probably address the soundproof wall that we were talking about as well. And then the codes.
Absolutely. I think, you know, those are very great points. And as we are preparing the RFP, the consultants, you know, that we hire, you know, we took into consideration fire codes, egress, and the space, as you pointed out, you know, space behind, so people can access, walk behind, you know, I mean, the dais, you know, the president and everybody. In terms of, you know, soundproofing panels, one of the visions and the experience that we just recently had, you know, at Rockefeller, we just remodeled, you know, one of the conference rooms where we added, you know, soundproofing panels, and that came out pretty good. So what we're going to try to do, you know, with the wall right there, we're going to try to emulate pretty much, you know, that soundproofing pretty much, you know, where we're going to go all the way up to the ceiling, above the ceiling. And we're hoping, you know, that will work, you know, at the same time. In the RFP, what we're going to be asking the contractors is to provide, you know, soundproofing doors and fire rated doors. that will allow us, you know, to achieve, you know, that acoustic, you know, and kind of, you know, soundproofing that we're looking for. Everything in the renderings that April has shown has been considered and has been used, you know, using AutoCAD, where we think, you know, we'll be able to maximize, you know, the space. We're looking at about, you know, 32 by 33 more or less, the space, you know, for the boardroom. And then about, you know, 15 by 26, you know, with smaller conference room as well. So everything is, you know, using AutoCAD and kind of taking into consideration, you know, the space that we have, you know, as well.
Will we have some sort of a specification, you know, so many dB reduction in noise between the conference room, the closed session room, and the main boardroom? Will there be in the request for proposal, or is it just going to be a, trust me, we're going to, you know, try to do the best we can?
No. Those are things that we've considered and we'll be asking, you know, the contractors to provide at least, you know, some kind of, you know, range where we can achieve, you know, that acoustical, you know, or at least, you know, that soundproofing, you know, kind of range, you know, it could be, you know, between 57 dBs to 60 or 70 dBs, you know, depending on what they recommend and the size, you know, as well. You know, I say we're going to do a mandatory walkthrough where they're going to come in and assess, you know, the size of the room, assess, you know, the conditions of the room, the structure, and that way, you know, we'll be asking to provide us, you know, that kind of soundproofing, you know, range or levels that we're hoping, you know, we can achieve.
Okay, I'm not sure. I want to make sure that basically that we're not having a kind of a trust me, you know, I think that if I build this, it'll probably work, a fire, you know, a dense fire resistant door and some sound panels. We think that'll work, right? But if it doesn't work, then we've kind of, we've done this all for kind of nothing. We still have to kick the public out of the main room, because if we're having a conversation in this other room, it would be overheard, and that's kind of important that it work. And so I'm trying to make sure that somehow in the RFP that there's some kind of a specification that says that it works, so that we maybe do some kind of a research or study or something a little bit to figure out what that needs to be so that it would work. So were there other things that, I'm sorry, I interrupted your response.
No, I think, you know, those things will be considered, you know. I think, you know, when we do the mandatory walkthrough, those are points that will be presented to all the contractors that come in. And we'll reiterate, you know, that we want to achieve, you know, a good level, you know, soundproofing, you know, for both rooms. The other thing that we got to take into consideration is that we're really dealing, you know, with an infrastructure, you know, that has been, you know, here for years. And in order to maximize costs as well, you know, we've got to take advantage of the structure that we have, the infrastructure that we have. So in that, you know, we'll put that challenge, you know, to the contractors to really, you know, give us that maximization of, you know, soundproofing, you know, when they come in, saying, look at the interior, look at the infrastructure that we have. What can we do in order to get that, you know, level of soundproofing?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
And the other thing I wanted to point out real quick on that, Director Colley, is the divider that's right here now with the panels and how the panels come together. That was pretty soundproof. I mean, we would have meetings in both of these rooms, and with that opened, and even though it comes apart, you could not hear in this room what was happening in this room. So I believe that we would be able to do that successfully, I would hope. But that is something that we're definitely asking for. But we could do it with this, and these are panels that fold in together, and there's space, and it worked.
Just one thing for you, Ed, too. We have existing doors, and we have closed session in here, and people are standing out in the hall. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be much different than them sitting in here and having a good fire door. And there's things that you can do. You're absolutely correct. The doors are hard to sound. The work that I do over at the Child and Family Center, we have at the doorways, We have a little, it's a noise generator at the door that stops any sound from coming through there. So there are things that they can do to mitigate that sound.
Dr. Bronstein.
Thank you. Okay, so we can always just use the door here and just have this closed here. And yes, we'll have to walk out or something like that. But if it's a deal breaker, I also know that soundproofing, I mean, it happens. They do voice acting and, you know, recordings and so with doors. So I'm sure we can figure out something. But I agree with the director, Kali, that it needs to be a priority or else what are we doing? You know, it's silly to do all that. But I digress. So I'm not a fan of spending $750,000 on perks for directors. So my questions are more like, how often is there a need for an additional space for staff? That's one question. Another question is, how is this really servicing the public? How is the public benefiting from this expense? How is it making their meetings better? And then my last question has to do with Pine Street. Is there area there for us to have a closed session if we need in the time while we're there?
Great questions. So I'll start with your first one. How often would this room be used by staff? All the time. I'm asked all the time if somebody could use this room. And I have to say no, because it's set up specifically for board meetings and it's not easily changed around. How often was it used before? All the time. So I get, like I said, I get requests all the time to do it. And so this is a big, big benefit for the for staff here to have an additional room to use. The benefits to the public with a smaller, more intimate room, they're going to be able to see the board. They're going to be able to see the board's reactions. They're going to be able to hear the board. They're going to be able to see PowerPoints more clearly. They don't have to walk out of the room when we go into closed session. They can stay in the room. Pine Street is there a closed session option there? There would not be. It's not big enough for us to, if we were to say, let's remodel.
We would just have to go. There's an upstairs conference room.
Yeah, we would have to go upstairs to a conference room. It wouldn't really be a closed session room. It would be a conference room that's used by staff upstairs. Could we do it? Sure. I think we can do anything we want to do, but is it realistic? That's up to the board if they wanted to do that. But
My question is, if we do the remodeling and we're at Pine Street and we need to do closed session.
Oh, how would we do it?
We can't, we have the option. Do
oh,
we
absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We could go upstairs and do that. That is actually.
We move ourselves to a conference room that's relatively far from the boardroom and let the public stay in that space. So just be a little bit of moving, but it could be workable during that time.
And this space over here where everybody's sitting, sorry, everybody past this lovely wood thing, that can't be, like, all the chairs can't just be packed up and put a desk. Like, there's no way to utilize the room as it is for people.
We have cameras that are set up in the room. And so because of that, they're set up for our for the iPad. So if we keep moving things around, then they have to readjust it every single time they come in here. Plus, something to consider, too, is back what I was saying at the very beginning. Before, when we used to have meetings in this room and it was a multi-purpose room and it was switched out all the time, it realistically was switched out all the time. So buildings and grounds would have to come down, pack everything up, including the board tables, roll them out, rearrange the room, and then come back that night or the first thing in the morning to put it back together. So could we do that? Sure, if we could, it would take more time and more staff time and effort to do it. But this room isn't used for that. This is a permanent room due to the hybrid.
Okay, because I was just thinking, like, as you said, we have the panels. Can't we just close it up every once in a while and let people do whatever they need on the other side?
We could. The panels are in need of some maintenance. Unfortunately, they're quite old. So we would have to do some maintenance on them first because they can, you know, cause safety issues. But yeah, absolutely, we could and just rearrange. But this room is used on occasion, like I said earlier. It's used for staff meetings, executive staff meetings, but nothing's moved. And if we do do it for other meetings, then it's something that tables are brought in and maybe put across this section. But it's not really a room that's used for anything else. It really is just a permanent boardroom.
Okay. Thank you. And by the way, you did a phenomenal job.
Oh, thank you.
And it was great. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your questions.
Okay. Vice President Ozahas.
Ms. Jacobs, going back to some directors' concerns, can you talk about conference capacities on the second floor versus the multipurpose room?
Are you talking about Pine Street?
No, here.
Okay, so the conference rooms upstairs, we have two conference rooms upstairs. One is the GM conference room, and it holds about eight people. And then we have one in the finance conference. There's a finance conference room down the hall. And that, I think, houses what, Rochelle, about the same? Eight. Yeah, eight, but tight. Those are our only two options. There's right. No other conference room in the
same. And then how many people can be seated in the multipurpose room?
If we did this room?
The multipurpose room, yes.
The closed session room. We would have, I believe we did, Roland, correct me if I'm wrong, is it 14? 14 spots? So we have 14 spots plus we could bring in chairs if we had additional staff or additional, it would be additional staff or consultants that came in for closed session. We'd be able to add them to the wall. So we could probably potentially roll in. What do you think about 20 people in that room? Yeah. In the multipurpose room? Yeah. Maybe a little bit more, probably a little bit more.
Okay. And based on the request that you received, the staff will be using that room all the time. Is that right?
I think it'd be used quite often. Absolutely. Because it would be in other facilities would use it. Because we do get requests from Pine, from Rockefeller, from Summit to use the room. And we have to say no. So they use the discovery room. And that has to be rearranged because the teachers use that in the morning.
So I'll just say a couple things on that. Our executive team intentionally meets in different locations. We move around to the different locations so that we're visible to the staff and we have a chance to interact before or after our meetings. And we do use this space. Currently, we all sit here and Chris has to operate the microphone so we can hear each other, which is kind of fun putting him through his paces, when we rotate here. I think the other thing is we do a lot of Teams-based processes, not Teams software, but Teams, cross-functional teams working together. And it's really useful to have a number of different locations available for, you know, groups larger than six, seven, eight. Certainly my conference room's available, the finance conference room's available here. But anything bigger than that, there's also a room over by HR that occasionally gets used. And it's on the list for some updates too. It's kind of a dark place. There's like no windows, I don't think. I do think that the space would be used. I think also creating a permanent space for the boardroom that's static and can, you know, the AV equipment can be really designed and dialed in, the acoustics for people hearing each other can be dialed in. I think those are the things that you'll see a benefit from kind of restructuring that space. Now that we have a final, at least as far as anybody can foresee, a final board size, I think we now have a more static, predictable. We've been through a transitional phase where we went from an 11-member board that used to be on a completely different dais here to this modular dais that allowed us to go from 15 back down to 9. And so I think part of the thinking was we've arrived at that point. And at the same time, the Pine Street boardroom, which is a nice boardroom that Newhall had, it's been beautifully repurposed into a very flexible training room space. We've also done our Water Academy sessions there. We've had EOC kinds of training that I know there's a ton of stuff that happens in that space. So it's not an underutilized space at all there. But it has those elements of kind of tables you can move around and reconfigure. I'm sure most of us have been in that room at one point or another, but we're really looking at this as a space that is, you know, creating a permanent board meeting space that the board can utilize with the functionality that it needs, and really the public as well, and coming in. And I think one other thing is that we've thought about, we don't usually have meetings with huge turnouts, but you know, historically, occasionally you might get one every few years on something, maybe every 5 years. That closed session room could easily be turned into an overflow room because we've got TV monitors in there. So people can, you know, see and hear what's going on if we ever had an overflow crowd situation, or staff could go into that room to create more room for the public. Just some additional thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. Yeah, I agree. I don't think you can have enough conference rooms, especially this one being the biggest one in this facility. So I definitely support this this request. Back to you, President Martin.
Thank you. I'd like to respond to a couple of the comments. Director Colley, I'm not sure how far back your memory goes, but I only go back 10 years. And the boardroom for the CLWA arrangement was pretty much what we're looking at now, where there was a table with the general manager, the attorney, and the board secretary facing the dais. And I like that arrangement, to be honest with you. This is almost, well, this at least puts the board secretary at the dais, however you want to pronounce it. And I think it's a much more, I think it's a closer, everybody's going to have better visuals, everybody's going to have better sound. It's a more functional boardroom. The separate closed session room obviously is good. And secondly, so that was response to your comment. Director Bronstein, I don't consider this a perk for the board. I think we could all sit at this dais perfectly well indefinitely. But I think this serves the public better, serves the staff better. It makes a more functional boardroom, a modern boardroom with the curved, the visuals are better for whoever's sitting up here. It's kind of a pain to always, somebody's over there pointing over here because I can't see there. And so I think the dais on a radius is really helpful, and having the public closer to the board, I think, is better. So with that, I really like the arrangement the way it is. And I'm pretty confident we could work out the sound issues. We just make that a requirement. And there's got to be technology for that as well. So Director Armitage.
Thank you. First, lovely presentation, Ms. Jacobs. You were nervous over nothing. You did a great job. You know, the design seems lovely and modern. And I appreciate the work that the committee, the ad hoc committee, put into preparing the options for us. I do want to say I do like having a little more space too. I share that same concern as Director Colley. And I will say, after having read the information in the packet and coming into the meeting, I was kind of leaning more to, I think it's fine the way it is. I did also share similar thoughts about, well, if we're going to spend this money, I'd really want to make sure that the public and staff get the benefit out of it, more so than what we would get out of it as well. So I appreciated your questions, Director Bronstein, asking about how would staff benefit from this. And I appreciated your answers, and that's kind of swayed me a little bit in my mind. But I do have a couple follow-up questions. One is, I didn't count the chairs and the rendition drawing. How many, because we often have a lot of staff members sitting in the audience, how many seats would be available to the public? I guess that's the first question. And then secondly, during
Director Armitage, can I answer that one?
Yeah, yes, go ahead. Okay.
So right now we currently have 30 spots. With the rendition, we would have 30 spots as well. So okay. The public doesn't lose any spot, okay. And staff doesn't either. Go ahead.
Good to know. Thank you. And then secondly, during a transition, would the hybrid technology still be available?
Yes, it would.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Director Colley.
So I'm very much agree that the semicircular dais is way more preferable. I you can't with this box, you can't see other directors easily. And so it would enhance communication for sure. And again, I love the idea of having a monitor here that I can see. The price tag is, as at least one of the directors pointed out, kind of shocking. So this room used to be used. The tables that the board used were portable and would wheel away. I have no idea where they went. We've had in years past staff lunches in here. I believe this entire room is the biggest room anywhere in the agency. Is that a true statement? Probably. So
I think Pine Street is probably pretty close, but I'm not sure if we're larger or not, but probably pretty close to it. We're probably a little bit bigger.
It's been a long time since I've been in the Pine Street location, but I recall that room was kind of an odd size and not a great room Anyway, I'm wondering if we could get a lot of the same advantages if we were to just reconfigure this room. So if we were to take and refurbish this movable wall and make it functional back again and use this same dais layout on that third and effectively flip this room. And then when we're not having a board meeting, it would seem like you could relatively easily close that off and have a really nice large space here. It would eliminate the ability for us to do a closed session, but we could also move ourselves. I mean, we're only 9 people and all of us are, other than our board president recently, you know, he's recuperated enough that he's now mobile again. So assuming that we can all avoid falling off our decks or whatever, we could move ourselves into the training room and have closed session there. And I think that might be not particularly difficult or anything, and the public could stay in this room. I would think that if we set the dais up on that third and refurbish this, we could probably save a boatload of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'd like to consider ways to gain the important advantages, the semicircle, the improved technology, and not spend $750,000. Be my preference.
Director Cawley?
Yep.
I just wanted to say a couple things.
Sure.
So this room hasn't been updated since 1994, December of 1994, when the first meeting was held in this room. We haven't put a lot of money into this room. We've changed the carpet. We've done some chairs. We've added the audio because of the hybrid. But we haven't put anything into this room, really. So the $750,000, I know it sounds like it's a lot, but it's an investment into the boardroom that we have not done in 20 longer than that. I can't add tonight for some reason.
It's going to come out to 30 years.
I know. I did not do well in math. So making the changes is a benefit to staff. It's a benefit to the public. Could we move it over and just rearrange it? Then you've got the same room you got here. We still can't use it because we've got the cameras. It's going to cost a little bit more because we're switching the camera angles. So we're going to have to get, there'll be a little money put into that. Staff time to have to come in here and take the tables out, rearrange the boardroom. That takes staff time. Honestly, looking at this room, it needs to be modernized. If you go to any other boardroom at any other agency, they're updated. They spend the money because it makes a difference in your board meetings, makes a difference to the public, makes a difference to staff. You're investing money into the agency. You're not throwing it away. You're investing in it. And that's huge. That's not throwing it away because you're not going to do this again. You're not going to do this again for years. If you ever do it again, this is something that will be a permanent boardroom dais, a permanent boardroom situation here that is going to just, I'm not supposed to sway you either way, and I don't want to because that's not my job up here. But I just want to tell you, I put a lot of thought into it, and I really do think it'll make a difference to the public. It'll make a difference. And that was my first thought, public, then staff, then board, because the public can't see in here as well. But you cut this in half, it enhances the experience of being in this boardroom, not only here, but online. It's going to make a difference. We really do need to put some time and effort into this room. Sure. And this is, again, the last time we're going to be doing it for a long time, unless technology changes, and then technology would be updated, but you're not looking at doing anything else.
Director Cooper, did you want to comment?
Please. Obviously, Director Cawley is not going to be staying at the nice hotels when he goes to the conference. When April makes the reservations.
Tomba that he'll leave the light on.
Yeah. Motel 6 will leave the light on. You know, I think what staff is asking us here tonight is they've looked at a way to make more space for them because they need training room. And they've come up with a way to modernize this. They've got plenty of engineers. We don't have to engineer it, that's for sure, to do this and to look at those things. And I think there's some suggestions about the door, and those things are great to make some suggestions, but they engineer it. That's their job. Ours is to set the policy of, do we want to upgrade this room to a more modern room and provide a staff training room along with that? So that's our decision to do that, set the policy. They can engineer it. That's their job. So with that, I would make the motion that we accept staff's recommendation and proceed on a remodel. And I think there's some ideas here that they can look at and take into consideration. But I think putting more space for staff to hold their training meetings, their safety meetings, and all the other things that they need is very important, and they don't have that now.
Thank you.
So with that, I made a motion.
Do we have a second?
Oh, I had a comment this time.
Go ahead.
You can get a second first. Do you need a second first?
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Director Bronstein would like to comment.
So I was going to say that, April, you are persuading me. And I also really wanted to thank Director Cooper for his perspective, because when he put it that way, that staff is asking for a training space, for a space for them, it changes, for me at least, the way that I look at it, because at the end of the day, I'm happy. I personally can see everyone. I can hear everyone. I don't know what I'm going to do without being able to look at Director Cooper and laughing at me. So I want to... But last request, and I know that we're not getting into the weeds here, but that room looked super sterile and sad. So I just want to like throw that out there, that if we are doing this, maybe again, I'm not getting into the, I'm not telling them how to solve the problem. I'm just saying, I don't want it to look like a hospital room.
Got it. Vice President.
I just want to say, because I haven't said much, I'm trying to save my voice, but we did talk about it. It's not white. It's a white oak veneer. And then there's some other wood veneer in there. And I asked that be clear, that it not be painted white for the same reason.
It will not be white. I promise you, it will not be white. Not institutional white.
Just make sure that there's some like design. I'm trusting you guys. If I'm approving this, I'm trusting you guys to not make it look sad.
All we're approving tonight, the board is only approving going out for an RFP. It will come back for the board for approval, okay, with specifications and more information come next month.
Okay.
So this is just to get an RFP.
All right, we have a motion and a second. If there's no further discussion, Madam Secretary running back to her spot to. Please call for the vote.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
Sorry, April. The price tag is too much for me, so I'm going to vote no.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
No.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
Vice President Ozohowski.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
Thank you. This item will move forward.
Thank you very much. Now, excellent presentation, Madam Secretary.
And now we know what John goes through at home when she wants to remodel things at home. So.
All right. Let's move ahead to item 7, annual consideration of general manager's agreement, and item 7.1, consider salary determination and update to general manager's agreement following the annual performance evaluation presented by me. So let me introduce this. This is the time each year that we consider adjusting the general manager's compensation to reflect performance and position relative to a group of comparator agencies. But you all have the salary comparison spreadsheet produced by ARI, but I would ask you just focus on 2023. We have also completed Mr. Stone's performance evaluation, and while the details remain confidential between the board and Mr. Stone, I think the results indicate that the board agrees that he is doing an outstanding job. I don't think that's in question. Our policy in the past has been to strive to keep our general manager at least at the median point within the comparator agencies, which is $28,792 per month. I would like the board to consider this more of a starting point for our discussion and ask ourselves if we consider Mr. Stone to be a middle of the pack general manager by performance and skill set. I would like to set the starting point at $29,000 a month for his salary adjustment. But if the pleasure of the board is to reward Mr. Stone for his service at a more appropriate level, I suggest your consideration for either $29,500 or $30,000 a month, which would place him in the upper part of the range, which I think is appropriate for Mr. Stone's position in the state of California as a water expert and his job and the performance he's done for the agency. I'll open it up now for board discussion and a motion. Director Cooper.
You know, I like the survey that's been put together, and I appreciate that work that Ari puts into this. When you look at like agencies, and we've got some on this survey that are very similar to what we do, Cayugas Municipal Water District, Las Virgenes, United Water Conservation District. And if you look at, is MODOC on here? Yes, MODOC's on here, which is a paper agency, but they're a wholesaler. They're all in the 29,000 plus range. And we're not only just a retail agency, where we were a few years ago. We're a wholesale, we're a retail. We have a little bit of sewer line. We're a large water company now. We're almost 100,000 connections. We've got the third largest city in Los Angeles County that we're serving, as well as outside of that city. So, you know, I think getting our general manager up to And certainly he is not a middle of the road general manager. You know, we have had the good fortune to get somebody who is very well known and very active in the water industry and has done this agency an excellent job. So I think getting him up over the 29 or 29.5 range up into where kind of that Las Virgenes, Cayegas, Modoc, those people are the ones that are very similar to what it is we do. I that would be my preference. 29.5.
All right. Director Cooper has made a motion to increase the general manager's salary.
So Ms. Braunstein doesn't get mad at me, is I'd like to not make the motion yet. I'd like to hear some discussion.
Okay.
But and then when you'd like a motion, come back and I'll make the 29.5 after she's had a chance to comment. I don't want to leave her out.
Director Braunstein.
Thank you, Director Cooper. I appreciate that. I would agree with you on this matter. I know, jaws dropping. I get it. But this is somewhere that I would rather spend money on making sure that we have and retain strong leadership. So I'm comfortable with that figure at least.
Okay.
That was a second? When the time comes?
When the time comes.
Vice President Ozahowski.
I would like to echo Director Cooper's statements. Las Virgenes operations are 25,000 acres feed per year, and they're all purchased from MET, as opposed to our very diverse portfolio. In addition, some of these agencies do not deal with the same problems that we are dealing with, that our general manager has been very successful in handling. And I mention this a lot, coming from the private sector, there's this notion where it's very common in these days to jump from one company to another because your efforts, your achievements are not validated. And so certainly I want to not have that here and definitely award someone who has done a lot for this agency and for our ratepayers and multitude of scenarios, whether it be litigation, whether hiring his direct reports that are, you know, phenomenal at their job, and seeking improvements and not stopping him or his direct reports from seeking other ways and achieving those goals. So, you know, if we look at, let's see, page 413, item 7.1, you have these three top agencies, with Irvine Ranch having 126,600 connections. And that monthly salary is at 31,000. And then comparing it to Water District ranked number fifth at 29,219. I think I would move for us to move to maybe an 11% increase to 29,970, or maybe a round figure of 30,000 for our general manager. That'll be my thought, but I'll leave it up to the directors to make their statements.
Any other Director Collins?
Just a question. The structure of these recommendations that you folks are coming up with, is this a base salary and a base salary only? Is there some other compensation in his package other than an automobile?
Whatever is left in his contract, I don't think it's going to be changed.
Trying to remember, but is there deferred compensation in his salary already? That's my, or any other. So are these other numbers, the comparators included?
To give you an example, Monday, I was on a call for a few hours. We were doing the chief executive officer for Aqua. We just finished his evaluation, and we just did his salary increase, and we took him to $352,000 a year. And that's base salary. That's not any benefits, anything else. That's just base salary. So, yeah, I think we're in the right ballpark. I think we're doing well.
So I just, and forgive me because my memory is fading a little bit, but we have in the past had deferred comp requests and granted it. I just don't remember in the GM's contract if I can get an answer to the question, if there's deferred comp in the contract that would be stacked on top of this is my question.
Yeah. And if I could chime in, it would, and Ari can come and speak to it in more detail. At the last amendment we did, which is typical for a lot of contracts to have a 401(a) contribution. There is a 401(a) contribution. And I want to make sure that I'm describing this accurately. It's 4% employee's annual compensation to the 401(a).
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And do all of these other numbers also have another 4% on top of them? So, because that would be surprising. Okay, so the numbers that I'm looking at in the comparator agencies may not have that 4%. Right, but we don't know if these other general managers get deferred compensation. We have no idea. So I'm trying to make an apples to apples comparison.
Knowing a few of the agencies and representing a few, I know that a few of them do. I can't speak to all of them, but I do know that it's fairly common. I know MODOC for sure has a 401(a) component in the contract that was being used for comparison purposes.
Okay. It would be nice when we get data if the data was a fair apples to apples comparison, because I just don't know what this data is telling me. If some of them have the 4% in it, some of them don't. It doesn't. Yeah, it makes it more difficult for me to
maybe
understand the data.
Yeah, I see a variety of different types of quote unquote additional compensation. Some people get additional paid time off. Some people have 401(a). Some people have an annual lump sum payment that's made at the end of each year. So it really does run the gamut, but it is fairly common to have something in addition to your base salary.
Vice President Gutzeit.
I want to agree with Director Colley in terms of future presentations. I know we've, at least at some point, seen the contract before. And the information on number of connections was very useful. So I think maybe a little more detail in the future. But at present, I'm inclined to support Director Cooper's recommendation. In that ballpark is comfortable for me.
Okay. There is no intention to change any of the other elements of his contract other than the base salary at this time. So I know that doesn't address your questioning completely, but. Director Bronstein.
I was going to say that I wanted to agree with Director Cooper. But I actually find myself more aligned with monetarily where Director Orzechowski has landed. But again, I'd like to hear from everybody here and not just myself.
I would be okay with accepting Vice President Orzechowski's recommendation. I think that puts him in the group where he belongs.
disagree with Director Wyszowski. That our general manager's performance has been very strong this last year and preceding years, and I'm comfortable with that level of compensation.
Director Armitage.
And I agree with the assessment given by everybody else up until now. And I'm also comfortable with the range Vice President Wyszowski pitched.
You want to amend your motion? Or Director Peterson, did you want to speak?
There's no motion on the
There's no floor motion yet. On right yeah. now. But I would make a motion for compensation, base salary of, as recommended by Director Vice President Wyszowski, which is 30,000. Yeah, 30,000.
30,000. I mean, 11% would be 29,970, but I think we can move with 30,000.
Yeah, 30,000 is my recommendation to
them. Okay.
I'll second that.
Okay. So to, did you want to speak, Director Collins? Okay. So the substitute motion, or however you want to call it?
There was, in the interest of everyone being very polite to each other, there was no motion on the table until Director Peterson made one and seconded by Director Bronstein. So the motion on the table is to approve a contract amendment to increase the general manager's salary to $30,000 a month.
Right. Okay. Unless there's further discussion, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
President Martin, just yes. one small comment. Just want to say this, Mr. Stone, that you know, we value your leadership at the water agency, and let this kind of reflect that we value good work, not only from you, but from your direct reports and from everyone at the agency.
Yes.
Back to you, President Martin.
Well said, Vice President Wyszowski. All right, Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
As I call your name, please state how you vote. Director Armitage.
Yes.
Director Bronstein.
Yes.
Director Cawley.
No.
Director Cooper.
Yes.
Director Peterson.
Yes.
Director Marks.
Yes.
Vice President Wyszowski.
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit.
Yes.
President Martin.
Yes.
This item does pass. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Congratulations, Mr. Stone. And we are now moving on to item 8, General Manager's Report on Activities, Projects, and Programs. Mr. Stone.
Okay, thank you very much. I just want to say I do appreciate the vote of confidence and the discussion from the board. And somewhere Jerry Gladbach is smiling tonight, as he was often my cheerleader in these discussions. So I do appreciate that. Want to quickly acknowledge our staff who made presentations tonight for a great job. And I'm, you know, out of fear of missing someone now because it's getting late. Steve, Jesus, Kathleen helping out there, Chris, Rochelle, and April. And you know, if I'm going to keep on my movie theory theme tonight, which I probably got from Kevin's updates on the board meeting, it was kind of like the best thing since the King's speech, you know, watching April sweating out, you know, making this presentation. She worked really hard at this. She even did a run through with us yesterday and took constructive comments. But she had some of the most brilliant ideas herself, which was to take the microphone, walk around and show you where things were going to be. I'll take minor credit for the blue tape. That was about it. So you could see where that wall was going to be. But great job, April. Really fantastic. A couple of things I want to just cover tonight in an update. As I mentioned previously, SCV Water has joined a group of water agencies from across California and the West, including Arizona, as part of the Water Advisory Group for the Center for Western Water. This is always a tongue twister. Center for Western Weather and Water Extremes, or C3WE. at Scripps Institute for Oceanography in San Diego. And that's Dr. Marty Ralph, or Martin Ralph, who heads that up. Both Najwa and I had a chance to go down there on Monday before Aqua. We had a long route each to attend a water advisory group meeting that was held down at Scripps on Monday afternoon last week. We received updates that included some opening remarks from the director of the National Weather Service Office of Weather Prediction. We got a winter precipitation preview and atmospheric river reconnaissance briefing from two key staff members and researchers for C3WE. In recent years, the work done there and in cooperation with NOAA and other partners has resulted in additional resources such as aircraft flights from NOAA and the U.S. Air Force taking measurements and dropping atmospheric measurement devices out in the Pacific, similar to what has been done with hurricanes, as well as deploying a network of ocean buoys in the western and northern Pacific. The expansion of this measurement capability has been helpful in improving atmospheric river forecasting and extending the time horizon that we have to prepare, as well as the locational accuracy of knowing when those atmospheric rivers and where they'll hit and at what intensity. It's an evolving science. It's not, you know, there is a vision for sort of a stretch goal, if you will, of 7 to 10 days out, really having, you know, much more clarity. And this would yield benefits in how we can operate reservoirs, as well as how as response agencies can plan for evacuation cautions and disaster response. So it's great to see and hear of their efforts. This year, they're hoping to have a period where they can actually, in addition to flights out of Hawaii, which is the furthest west they get right now, they're looking to try to get at least a couple of weeks where they could get some flights out of Guam. And that's contingent on some Air Force resources being available. As we know, it's a relatively active area of the world. So, you know, weather will take second priority at other things, which could give them a glimpse into whether future further westward measurements could enhance the forecasting horizons. So there's quite a bit of creativity and experimentation. One of the things about that is, as you can imagine, the challenge is getting ongoing resources to operate and deploy these flights. So, you know, just as the hurricane reconnaissance capabilities evolved over the years, as it was proven out that they could make a meaningful difference in forecasting and damage mitigation and loss of life mitigation, we're still working towards getting ongoing federal funding at some sustainable level. So one of the things we did discuss is signing on to a group letter, you know, I don't know, they call them NASCAR letters, you know, of signatories supporting some budget priorities there, as the conference committee will be meeting to hash out the different versions of the budget that are in play. Before the meeting, we also had a chance to go out to tour the Scripps Research Pier and hear about a range of other research activities that they're conducting, including atmospheric research in a few other areas. They have a lot of interesting equipment out there, and we got to see that. We also had an opportunity to launch a small weather balloon from the pier, and my eminent qualifications of being the tallest in attendance got me the job of holding the balloon and then letting go of the balloon, and I almost did it correctly, pretty close. I think there might have been a little lag between the countdown and when I let go. But that was kind of fun. And that was a local research, coastal research project they're doing, looking at the marine layer and patterns there and better understanding its influence. And all this stuff kind of feeds back into climate science and modeling as well, both validation of models and then building more insights back into these models as well, so they can be helpful to us in the future. Moving on, we also attended the, along with a number of staff and board members, the Aqua Conference in Indian Wells. While there, I attended a briefing on the status of the Delta Conveyance Project hosted by DWR and the Delta Conveyance Authority. The final EIR for that project should be released sometime this month. Later in 2024, there will be the federal EIS and Record of Decision would be completed. There's also upcoming activity expected in 2024, including the initiation of the water rights permit application for the change in diversion location. So they already have a water rights permit, but they need to amend that to recognize the additional diversion point. And that process will take some time, but they expect to maybe get that started early next year. In addition, a little further out in the year, there should be an updated cost estimate and economic analysis for the project. You know, over the last several years, in modifying the concept from two tunnels to one tunnel and taking a much more detailed look at the alignment and footprint and impacts that they have on the community, there's been a lot of efficiency, I think, gained in the project. Now, obviously, it's competing against escalation, so we'll see how that comes out. But I think we have a dollar for dollar, a more cost efficient approach to this, and a less impactful approach as well. The DCA continues to work for additional ways to optimize that footprint, even as the project is being finalized from an EIR standpoint. They'll still look at whether there's anything they can do within the envelope of the EIR to find more efficiencies there. So it's possible you'll see a cost estimate update based on the EIR and then even some further value engineering efforts there to try to make it as efficient as they can make it for participants. Also, while at Aqua, our water resources team, including Steve, Ali, and Najwa, set up a number of meetings. In fact, you may not have seen me at a lot of sessions, and that's because we were having very productive meetings with our partners in different resource projects. And we kind of spoke to that kind of coming full circle from the water supply verification discussion earlier tonight. We met with AVEC to talk about their project and where they are. And their board's having a workshop to kind of talk more about where they want to go. Their phase one project is in pretty good shape now, and they're starting to put water in that. Met was the only partner in that project. For phase two, they're looking at multiple partners. And I think we got some assurance that if we're interested and we can come to appropriate terms, they see a natural alignment with our two agencies because of our geography and shared needs and, you know, status as state contractors. So we look forward to exploring that more on that project. Rosedale Rio Bravo had a very good discussion about, you know, the conditions up there and with Sigma and how they're navigating that. I think now that we're out of the drought, as you know, we kind of put a expansion of recovery capacity on hold, but I think we had at least one really interesting suggestion to explore that they came up with about one way to maybe enhance recovery, not only, not necessarily volume, but durability of the recovery facility. And so we'll talk some more about that. And then eventually looking at in adding that increased volume that we're looking for as well. And we had some good discussions with the Westside Water Agencies, who, as you know, we have some transactions with this year, and probably a few more, but those were the ones that I sat in on. So very productive week. I think from that, I'll just conclude my report. And again, really appreciate, I guess I'll end with Sally Field. I really feel appreciated, and I thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Yes. Do we have any public comment on Mr. Stone's presentation?
We do not.
Have any direct Vice President Ozahoff?
Mr. Stone, I'm going to ask a question to you, but more or less directed to Mr. Ramirez. So unfortunately, my family van had its catalytic converter stolen midday in front of a restaurant. Stranding my wife and my daughters in another county for a couple of days. Mr. Ramirez, how many of our vehicles have been upgraded with cages on their catalytic converters? If you can answer that question.
Sure, it's most of the fleet at Rockford site, which has those challenges. So since installing the cab cages, we have had issues.
Okay.
I can't really hear him. Sorry.
Come on up.
So it's been the fleet at the Rockefeller site since that's the one that had the issue. And after installing the cages, we have not had any other instances of cats installing successfully. So, okay. But we are looking at expanding it to other vehicles, as we can.
I'm looking at the prices of platinum, palladium, and rhodium, the precious metal in that color converters, and they've significantly decreased since 2021. But I was wondering in your regular reports to the FOA committee, if you can report on those prices, because there's a correlation between theft and the current market price of those metals.
Okay. Sounds
good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then question to Mr. Cole and Mr. Stone regarding Sigma. Big issue in Central Valley. I know we have absolutely nothing in common there, but have we received a copy of their rejected plans and see what kind of comments came back from the board as a lesson learned, or just to see what the issue is?
Yeah, we have been keeping an eye on it, Vice President Ozuhowski. I think the main failure that we're seeing in some of them that are being communicated have to deal with coordinating. So a lot of these basins have multiple GSPs, and they have different thresholds that they're dealing with. And so that coordination is something that's required by Sigma between the basins. And so a lot of that pressure is dealing with that lack of coordination in aligning the same thresholds in similar, like adjacent basins that are connected.
Okay. All right.
So, and there are many other ones. Those are kind of the plans and the areas that we have interest in that are having that challenge.
Understood. Thank you. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Stone. Thank you, Mr. Cole. Back to you, President Martin.
Any other comments or questions for Ms. Director Armitage?
Real brief, just in response to the story of the wonderful field trip down to Scripps, I just want to say I think it's great that the agency is supporting this type of earth science research that's only going to benefit all the water agencies, hopefully, as this great data comes out. So thank you for that. And I would encourage the agency to do that as much as possible.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And there are just, to make it clear, I mean, part of the strategy is if we each chip in a little bit, and there are a number of other agencies at the table, including Orange County and Irvine Ranch and others from across the state. So I think that group will likely grow over time. They have a really very capable person who's kind of their business development person. I had a great chance to talk with her more after that session while we were all waiting for traffic to subside. And she's got an amazing background. They're very fortunate to have her. I did not realize the horsepower, you know, there. And she's not only handling industry outreach for that group, but she's handling it for all of the research happening at Scripps, which is just mind-boggling. So fantastic conversation, and I think we can look forward to seeing them. They're really good at leveraging partnerships and funding and getting good science, and they really listen to what, you know, the discussion was. Part of that discussion was about what do we need, what's a priority to get. So they're not just doing research to do research. They're trying to find ways to apply it in meaningful fronts to improve our day-to-day lives. And I think that's great.
Director Cooper.
Matt, did they say it's going to rain?
Well, I kind of didn't want to be a downer, but one of the things that they said, this is one of the hardest year types to really predict. This is while last year, you know, once everything aligned, it was just like watching fish, you know, coming in, and tracking them, and they had great sensing and data, and they're really excited about those tools are really working. One of the things that we heard was that the correlation of El Nino and La Nina is not what we all hear in the popular, you know, media. And in fact, for wet years, for high precipitation years, there's a stronger correlation to the regime setting up for atmospheric rivers. It's a great example as last year was not an El Nino year, but we got the track set up for atmospheric rivers, and it delivered and delivered and delivered. And you can have El Nino years where the track is shifted way north. And, you know, right now the Northwest is getting the benefit of atmospheric rivers, but we may not get as many. And so it's really, you know, I hate to say it, but they were kind of like 50-50. Like there's just, they can look out a couple of weeks with a pretty good, you know, and it's not looking too wet down here at this moment. And that's the other area where they're really trying to do, you know, more forecasting is that intermediate, you know, to seasonal duration of, you know, a month or two out and several months out, and really trying to figure out what is the data that's going to correlate reliably. What are the signals out there? And they look at a lot of stuff. They look at all kinds of things further out on the globe to try to figure out if they can pick up patterns that could become reliable indicators. And as again, just this year is not one of those ones where there's a lot of certainty either way. It could go wet, but this is why we're putting more in resources, you know, into this research, just to try to get to the point where we have better and better ability to forecast even in these difficult years.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Stone? Seeing none, we can move to item 9, committee meeting recap report for informational purposes only. There were 3 reports included in your packet. First, are there any public comment on the committee meeting recap reports?
There is not.
Very good. Any questions or discussion from the board? All right. Seeing none, we will move to item 10, written reports for informational purposes only. There were 4 reports included in your packet, as well as the committee planning calendars. Are there any public comment on those items, Madam Secretary?
There is not.
Any discussion or questions from the board? Director Armitage.
I'll go quick because I know it's getting late. In the water resources and outreach section report, there was information about the recycled water master plan, a plan for a stakeholder engagement strategies currently being developed. I just wanted to, that's going to be open to the public, right?
I think that was, yeah, what we were going to consider was a process by which you could engage and weigh in on it.
Okay, because I think it should be open to the public.
Thank you. I appreciate the input.
Yeah, and then under, there's a description about conservation staff highlighting various customers and customer groups for all they're doing to conserve water. I think that's fantastic. And then the plan for the working with local HOAs to do a coffee and conservation pop-ups. I think that's even more fantastic. So I'm really glad to see that, because I keep saying that HOAs, I think, is where our conversations really need to be had in terms of conservation. And then lastly, I saw the note on how staff met with 3 native plant experts to determine support needs for Bridge Park Park. And I was really happy to see that, because I think that's really important. If we need to keep it pretty if we're going to inspire people to want to do the same. So thank you for that.
Any other questions about those reports? All right, then, seeing none, we can now move on to item 11, President's Report. I'll update the board on the following meetings outside of the agency conferences and events. The Santa Clara Valley Chamber of Commerce 2024 awards and installation will be on February 2, 2024 at 6 p.m. at the Hyatt Regency. Let the board secretary know if you'd like to attend. The Urban Water Institute Spring Conference will be in Palm Springs, February 21 to 23, 2024. And again, please check your emails for additional events. Upcoming board meetings, the regular board meeting December 19th, 2023 in this room at 6 p.m. The Upper Santa Clara Valley JPA meeting will also be the December 19th following the regular board meeting, and the Devil's Den Water Board meeting will also be the same night following the JPA board meeting. And also the next regular board meeting after that will be January 2, 2024 at 6 p.m. in this room. Upcoming committee meetings to be held at Summit Circle in the EWS boardroom will be 5:30, the December 7th Engineering and Operations Committee meeting, December 13th Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting, and the December 21st Public Outreach and Legislation Committee meeting was canceled. Upcoming committee meetings at Rio Vista Water Treatment Board boardroom at 5:30 will be the December 18th, 2023 Finance and Administration meeting was moved to December 11th. Additional information for the board. We will be adjourning tonight's meeting in memory of Rochelle Patterson's stepfather, Perry Joseph Ireland, who passed away last week. We have any public comment on the president's report?
We do not.
Any board questions or comments about what was just said? Very good. Seeing none, we can move to item 12, AB 1234 reports. There were two reports that were posted to the SCV Water website, sent out by email, and are each of your spots. Are there any AB 1234 reports tonight? Director Brownstein.
I haven't had a chance to write my written report, so I will be writing my AQUA report, but I wanted to report on it. But I attended AQUA from the 28th to the 30th of November. And it started off slow for me, but it really picked up at the end. And I really appreciated making connections with a lot of people. But again, I will write a full report. So thank you.
All right. Director Armitage.
And the same for me. I also attended AQUA Fall Conference, November 28th, 29th, and 30th. And I will also submit my written report before the next meeting. Thank you.
Director Cooper.
I also attended the AQUA conference from the 27th to the 30th. I thought it was an excellent conference this time. I went to some really good sessions. It was good seeing Kevin there. I think he picked up, you and I were in a couple of sessions together, and I think he picked up some good information, especially from Irvine Ranch Water District. I thought they had a really good program. And then December 4th, I attended a AQUA GM evaluation and salary setting for Dave Egerton.
Very good. Any other AB 1234 reports? Director Marks.
Also attended AQUA 28-3.
All right. I will give I'll try to be very brief. I attended the AQUA conference from November 27th through November 30th. On the 27th, I attended the AQUA JPIA board meeting. There were some rudimentary matters voted on and approved, but one item of interest for our board, I think, was presented for information. In November 2022, the executive committee heard a staff recommendation to implement an annual E.G. Jerry Gladbach Leadership Program grant. The grant was initiated for the 2023-24 program year and covers tuition and travel expenses for one Southern California and one Northern California attendee. Applications were received, and there were selections made for the Southern California recipient, Ahmed Khattab, IT manager for the Rainbow Municipal Water District in Fallbrook, California, and the Northern California recipient was Kyle Brothers, senior water treatment operator from the Stockton East Water District. So I thought the board would be interested to know that Jerry Gladbach's name is continuing on in the water world in California, as it should. On 11-28, I attended the AQUA Groundwater Committee meeting and reported out at the AQUA Region meeting. And I attended several other events on the following days, I will try to do a written report, that concludes my AQUA report. But on 12-4, which was just yesterday, I attended my one-on-one meeting with General Manager Stone by telephone. That concludes my report. I believe that concludes all AB 1234 reports. We have any public comment?
We do not, but can I ask for clarification from Director Cooper? Was that a virtual meeting at Aqua? Thank you.
Okay, move to item 13, director reports. Are there any director reports tonight? Dr. Bronstein.
I'm sorry to be that person tonight.
No, that's fine. That's good.
So, first of all, I wanted to appreciate all the presenters that were here tonight. And I hope that I love seeing them, but I also hope everybody's taking advantage of the hybrid as well, because as much as I like it being packed here, you know, I appreciate your time too. So beyond that, I wanted to call out the Green Team's emails. I don't know if you've been reading them, the six weeks of sustainability for the holidays. Those are great. So thank you for those. I get a kick out of them. After the Aqua, I stayed in that area for a while, and I actually, I went to the annual tamale festival, and I actually went to the booth for India's water authority, because I always wanted to like see what's everybody else doing out there. So they had a little booth and all that, and I wanted to say that we are so much cooler, but so yeah, I mean, I was quizzing the people, I was asking them, because I'm like, oh great, they're gonna love me. I didn't tell them what agency I was from, but didn't need to start anything. The only little thing that I thought was kind of like an interesting idea, we don't have to do it, it's just a suggestion. They have tablets for leak detection, like toilet leak, and they just give them out all the time because they're like, it's the most effective way, and they just have them like laying out everywhere. So I didn't know if that was a cheap way for us. We do that too. Oh my goodness, I told you, we do everything. Okay, never mind, I digress. And then lastly, I always believe that representation matters. So starting on December 7th, this Thursday night, Hanukkah is beginning. So I wanted to wish all our Jewish customers a happy Hanukkah. And that's it.
Director Colley.
A week and a half or so ago, I was helping do some repairs at my daughter's father-in-law's house. And he relayed, I thought, kind of an interesting story he had. Apparently, he had hired somebody who damaged some of the irrigation system. And so he had this crisis in the middle of a weekend. And he explained that he's like pretty panic stricken because obviously in the middle of the weekend, there's going to be a huge problem and he's not going to be able to afford it. And it's just going to go all to hell. Anyway, he called, and I guess by his telling, he'd hardly gotten off the phone and there's somebody there on his doorstep trying to fix the problem from the agency. Apparently the valve then didn't work, and he again was thinking, oh my God, how bad could this get? And apparently whoever arrived said, you know, don't worry about it, I'll be right back. And within just a very short time, the problem was repaired. New valve was installed. His comment was somewhere along the lines of, you know, normally government monopolies don't have to do the right thing, and he pretty much expected a government monopoly that runs a water to be all screwed up, and was pleasantly surprised that we were not and were very helpful. And so apparently our field crew was on top of it, our customer service folks were on top of it and solved his problems. And I enjoyed hearing his story. So I pass that on just to let our folks know that at least one customer out there really appreciated the government monopoly doing a good job, which doesn't always happen.
Thank you, Director Collins. Director Armitage.
Just one thing. So I just wanted to share that I was honored to be asked to be a guest speaker for the Community Gardens of Santa Clarita, which are the wonderful group of people who have those gardening plots down in Central Park below us. And so they asked me to come speak on the topic of, surprise, surprise, native plants, and why they're important to include in our green spaces. And of course, I also worked in information about how they can apply for rebates in their yards at home as well. So it was very well received. And I just want to send my appreciation to Mr. Dickens, who was gracious enough to spend some time with me on the phone beforehand and let me know what information he wanted of me to be sure to include. And I encourage them to reach out to the agency and invite somebody to come and do a whole session on rebates and go into much more detail. So it was fun. That's it. Thank you.
Good. Any other director reports? All right, we can move on to, well, we have any public comment on the reports that were given?
We do not.
Very good. We move to item 14, director requests for approval for event attendance. Are there any requests for event attendance tonight? Seeing none, we will move to adjournment. As mentioned earlier, we are adjourning the meeting, meaning tonight's meeting, in memory of Perry Joseph Ireland. I'd like to read to you what is in the certificate that will be presented to Rochelle for her family. Santa Clara Valley Water Agency in memoriam adjournment, Perry Joseph Ireland. On December 5th, 2023, the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency Board of Directors adjourned its regular board meeting in memory of your loved one. The agency extends its deepest sympathy and sincere condolences to you and your family, signed by Board President and the Board Vice President. With that, we are adjourned.